Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our school board meeting this Tuesday evening, February 23rd. Please silence all your phones. When you do that, please stand for the pledge.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We welcome everyone here who's with us this evening in the present, as well as those who are with us online. I would like to introduce the dais to you. On my far left is Mr. Carl Persis. He represents District 4. Next to him, on his right, is Mr. Ruben Colon, who represents District 5. To his right is our school board attorney, Mr. Ted Doran, who keeps us out of trouble. Over to our right is our delightful school board agency clerk, Ms. Erin Lieben. She, too, keeps us organized. On her left is our school board representative, Ms. Anita Burnett, representing District 2. To her left is my vice chairman, Ms. Jamie Haynes, representing District 1. To her left is our second-time returned superintendent, and that's as far as I'm going to go. I won't do third, but, you know, he's done first and second. That's plenty. Dr. Scott Fritz. And I'm Linda Cuthbert. I'm your chairman for this year, and I represent District 3. So welcome. Items for approval on this agenda is 1.03, 3.01, 6.01, 8.02, 20.01, through 20.06. We will have public participation quite a few times during our board meeting for items on the consent agenda. At 6:30 certain, for items of general interest pertaining to public education in Volusia County, a total of up to 15 minutes will be provided for people to speak, 3 minutes apiece. However, we would like to hear from as many people. Personally, if you come all this distance to come here, we want to hear from you. Time will be provided for public comment for any action item before a board action item is called for a vote on that item. And time will be provided at the end of the meeting for public comment, also concerning for items of general interest pertaining to the education in public of public education in Volusia County Schools. And during public participation, the board does not respond. We listen. Okay, 1.02, District Vision Statement and Board Member Comments. This is when we, as a board, recognize our district's mission and vision, and we make comments based on that, either schools we visited, issues that we feel that are important, in a brief statement. So would anyone like to begin? Mr. Colon.
And so our vision statement, to create lifelong learners prepared for an ever-changing global society, has never been more important than during this time when we're dealing with a global pandemic, and we realize that we're more connected to those across the sea than we ever thought we were. I am a proud school board member today. D5 is in the house. We have the chorus from Pine Ridge that was singing earlier, and then we have our proud Enterprise Rockets. So I am on cloud nine right now, and I will be quiet for now. And let someone else talk.
Thank you. I think you were very much to the point, and we quite understand. Mr. Persis, how about you, sir?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well said, Mr. Colon. Very, very well said. I can see how proud he is of all the students in his area, as we all are. And just wanted to say, as we end up this month of February, which I can't believe it's going to be March 1st, Monday, right? Yikes. We're just flying by. I hope you all, and the students I'm talking to, I hope you all have enjoyed learning a little bit about black history. We have such a rich history in our country, but not only in our country, but in our community. And so it's just so important to that you learn about all of our famous individuals, black or white or Native American or any color, because these are all of the individuals that make America great, and it's important that you learn about everybody. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Persis. Ms. Burnett.
Good evening. Thank you all for coming, and great job by the choir out there today. They sounded great, so cheers to them. I'm going to read the vision of the social-emotional learning, because I think that after some of the events that we've had this week, we need to remind ourselves that is part of our mission, too, and that we are here for that part of our education. So it is. We aim to seamlessly integrate SEL into the academic experience for all learners and educators of Volusia County Schools. Through SEL, we will continue to work on reversing old paradigms predicated on hierarchy, violence, race, and subordination. Instead, equality, mutual respect, collaboration, civic participation, high academic achievement, and joy in learning will be the norm. By providing a foundation for safe and positive learning through SEL, we will enhance students' abilities to succeed in school, careers, and life. Volusia County Schools is committed to creating a coherent and sustainable plan for long-term SEL implementation. So I hope that we can all remember that and help our counselors and help our students with their social-emotional learning.
Thank you, Ms. Purnett. Very well stated. Ms. Haynes.
I'd like to start off tonight and first say I'm so happy also to see students in the house. And I, too, am proud because Enterprise will always have my heart. That's actually the first school I taught at. And I taught at Pine Ridge High also. So I know that you belong to Mr. Cologne, but I'm also just as happy and proud to see you here this evening. But I also want to say this. I want to say a big thank you to all the teachers and staff out there that are still trying to keep things in some ways fun for all of you at school, because learning should be fun, and also provide you with some opportunities that you should, you know, especially at the elementary level, you should get to enjoy. And so I got some mail this week, and I love getting mail, especially this kind of mail. But I got a beautiful ornament that you can hang from some students at Citrus Grove Elementary. So I have to give a shout out to a fifth grade class there, Ms. Bundy's class. I talked about reading via Teams, which is a whole new experience to read aloud to students where you're not sitting in a room. But they sent me an ornament based on the book that I read, and they all signed it. So, like, I want to give a shout out to them. But one of the things that touched my heart, and I actually reached out to the teacher because she said to me, I know that you can read it, but I was sure you would enjoy it. I actually got Valentine cards this year in the mail. And I haven't had Valentine cards since I taught kindergarten first and second grade. But they were so neat to open them. But these came from some first grade students at Blue Lake, because Dr. Valgobin and I had visited their classroom, and I guess we made a good impression. And they said, well, we want to send Ms. Haynes and Dr. Valgobin some Valentine cards. And that was just really touching. So I want to say thank you to those students, because that's the kind of mail that, believe it or not, we like to get. And it is. And I think students should be recognized. And I do thank the teachers, though, that are still trying so hard in all of this to be able to do those kind of activities with kids and still give them that experience. Because we have to remember, especially at the elementary level, they're still little. You know that? And we've taken away a lot of things, but it's nice when we can give things back. And so I think that, too, goes along with, like, the social-emotional piece of what we need to do for our kids as well as our vision. So thank you, Mrs. Cuthbert.
Thank you, Ms. Haynes. I was able to venture out for the first time in months to a school activity. Because of my cancer treatments, I have not been able to really mix and visit my schools in Southeast Volusia and in the southern part of Port Orange. So I was able to watch my grandson, who's a junior varsity baseball player at New Smyrna High, pitch and, you know, be in the outfield for his arch rival, Spruce Creek High School JV baseball team. And boy, I'll tell you, two rivals were at each other's throats last night. But I do want to compliment on the great behavior of sportsmanship on the behavior of the crowd. It was packed. Most, I'd say 90%, everybody had a mask on. And it was so lovely to be out in the air in an evening, and it was cool, no mosquitoes. And what was really good, that meant that this game was supposed to be blessed. The rain went north and south of the New Smyrna sports area. So I want to be very grateful to not only the students in the classroom, but all those athletes and those who are in concerts and sing and perform. Thank you for all that extra preparations that you all make and all the visits you go to the different schools. And I'm very grateful all of you came here tonight. So thank you, because for any of us who are parents and grandparents, aunts and uncles, brothers, sisters, we love to see each of you perform. So thank you so much. Okay, we're going to continue with our board meeting now, so thank you. Let's see, where are we? Okay, 1.03, approval of the minutes of February 9th. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve the minutes for February 9th.
Okay, is there a second? Okay, the motion was made by Mr. Colon and quickly seconded by Mr. Persis to approve the minutes from our regular meeting and the regular session, not the works. Was it the workshop as well, or just the regular session? Okay, any discussion from the board? All those approved, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any those who oppose, please say nay. Motion is carried. 2.01, agenda changes. Dr. Fritz?
Yes, ma'am. We are removing item 19.01, the presentation of the strategic plan, which was done today during a workshop. In addition, we are adding 20.06, the approval of the district strategic plan tonight.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve these agenda changes?
I make the motion that we approve the removal of 19.01 and the addition of 20.06.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, it has been moved by Ms. Jamie Haynes that we eliminate 19.01 and add the board action item 20.01, you said?
Six.
20.06 to the agenda. Any board discussion? All those approved, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed, please say nay. Motion is passed. Thank you. 3.01, administrative appointments. Dr. Fritz.
I am very proud of our administrative recommendations for this evening. Our first one is the principal for Volusia Online Learning. It's the superintendent's recommendation that Danielle Leffler serve as the principal for Volusia Online Learning. Ms. Leffler has been a principal intern, and she has been in Volusia County Schools since 2011. This recommendation goes with a start date of March 1st. Ms. Leffler, come to the table, please.
Good evening, Ms. Leffler. We've known each other for a long period of time. We welcome you here this evening. Is there any? Let's see. I should ask for a motion first, correct? Okay. I was going to ask you to speak first, but I thought, well, maybe that we'll wait till we approve you first.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve Ms. Danielle. I've talked to you for a long time, and I can blame that on a chemo moment. I think I'll do that.
Yes, I enthusiastically make this motion.
Oh, good. Thank you for saving it. And a second?
I second.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Haynes. It's been moved by Mr. Carl Persis and seconded by Jamie Haynes to approve Ms. Danielle Leffler to be principal of Volusia Online Learning. Any board discussion? Any comments?
It depends on what she says next.
Well, congratulations. Welcome on board.
We're going to vote.
Well, I will. I'm just telling her congratulations. She's being a motion. Okay. All right. All those approved, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. Looks like you're it. All right. Okay. Now you can say whatever you'd like.
Thank you.
Mostly.
Thank you. Good evening, Madam Chair, distinguished school board members, Superintendent Fritz. It is with an excited and grateful heart that I accept the position of principal at Volusia Online Learning. I know I have big shoes to fill, but I look forward to continuing the visions of Dr. Carr and Dr. Peterson with an amazing team of passionate and talented professionals. Since my first day at Volusia Online Learning, I have been in awe of their dedication and do whatever it takes attitude, and I continue to be inspired by their work that is being done. There really is no place I'd rather be. To the faculty, staff, students, and families of Volusia Online Learning, as your principal, it is my top priority to build trust by asking questions and listening attentively so you always feel valued and heard. Together, we will continue to provide the best education possible by keeping students at the forefront of all of our decisions. I would like to take a moment to thank a few important leaders that helped prepare me for this role by being amazing role models and giving me opportunities to grow. Mark West, Todd Sparger, Teresa Marks, Katie Dyer, Brian Zink, Jim Tager, Bob Wallace, Tim Huth, Joe Castelli, and Susie Peterson. What a lineup, right? Thank you to all of you for believing in me and for showing me what it means to truly be a servant leader. Thank you to my mom, who is in her 35th year as a Volusia County Schools teacher, and to my dad in heaven for always being my biggest fan. Thank you to my husband, who since day one has always put my dreams and ambitions before his own. And finally, thank you to my kids, Addison, Nolan, and Easton, who are listening at home. I spared you guys. Mommy loves you, and I'm so thankful for your excitement to tag along to all of my school events, and I'm very lucky that they love office supplies as much as I do. And one last thing. As a product of Volusia County Schools, my love and passion for our district and our students runs deep. I have wanted to be a teacher here since first grade, when my teacher at Westside Elementary, Mrs. Stanley, said I was going to be a great teacher, but was a little ahead of my time. This pandemic has taken a toll on a lot of people, especially our VOL families. We have faced adversity we never could have imagined. I truly believe every adversity carries with it the seed of a greater benefit, and it is my hope and my goal that together as a Volusia Online Learning family, we take what we have been through and we use it as fuel to believe in ourselves and to be unstoppable. Tough times never last, but tough people do. We got this. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I would like to also add, you did say you're filling big shoes, and you are. And I see Mrs. Peterson is in the audience. Dr. Peterson, please stand up. We thank you very much for your service to Volusia County Schools and wish you well in your retirement. Good luck to you, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you, Danielle. Thank you. 4.01, schools. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were just, oh, I apologize.
No problem. Nathaniel Anderson, come forward. Chair and board, it is my great pleasure to recommend Nate Anderson to be the assistant principal for River Springs Middle School. He currently serves as a teacher on assignment at Westside. I will share something with you during his interview with me. He is true blue Volusia. He started in this county as a custodian and has given all he has to his students. He was at Campbell for many years, did amazing things with his test scores as a civics teacher, and it's my honor to recommend him to be the next assistant principal at River Springs.
Is there a motion to approve Mr. Nathaniel Anderson as assistant principal?
I'd like to make the motion that we approve Mr. Anderson for the assistant principal position at River Springs.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'd like to second that.
Okay, Mrs. Haynes has made your motion, and then Mr. Persis has seconded. Is there any board comment?
what's Dwayne Copeland going to do without him?
Well, he won't answer my phone calls right now.
I will have to tell you, as a person that's been at West Side a few times, you know, this guy is a giant. He is a rock. He is he's super, and I don't think you could have picked a better person. He is well loved by the students as well as the staff, and that's why I said about Mr. Copeland, he is definitely crying right now, but I'm sure there are tears of joy too, because as we all want to help folks move up in this world, and you certainly have earned that, and it's just nice to see when people work as hard as you have, and then everything that you've had, that good superintendents recognize that, and I'm very, very proud of you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anyone else?
I'm just going to tell you once again, welcome, well, in a few moments as soon as we vote, we're welcoming you to River Springs Middle, and I'm looking forward to having you there, and I think you're going to be a wonderful addition to the staff that we already have there. So thank you.
And I don't know who I'm happier for, you or your students, who will have the pleasure of being with you every single day. So good luck to you, sir. Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those who oppose, please say nay. You got this, just like what Ms. Leffler said. Congratulations. Is there anything you'd like to say?
You can say something if you'd like.
Can you guys hear me? Listen, I just want to extend a thank you to you, the school board members, Dr. Fritz, for taking the chance on a somebody like me. I think I can identify with the students because a lot of the students that I'm going to serve, I was once that student. I share with them in my interview, an educator helped me and an educator hurt me. Educator told me that I could never be more than, you know, a high school graduate. And I'm so glad that an educator stepped later in my life and reminded me that I can be anything I want to be. So with that story, if you look at my mask.
Go ahead.
There's a message on my mask.
Oh, I got it. I see.
The message is simply this. What you do matters. So that's a testament I carry with me every day. What I say, how I treat a student, how I encourage a student, because I know that they're just seeds being planted and they're waiting for a harvest. So I thank you for this opportunity. I thank God for my West Side family, and I am excited to serve my River Springs family. Thank you. Yes.
Dr. Fritz said it was safe for me to proceed. Okay. 5.01, recognition of African American History Month. Dr. Fritz.
We're actually on 4.01. Enterprise.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
It's okay.
We cannot forget Enterprise. They are 4.01. Dr. Fritz.
Ms. Douglas, where are you? There you are. Come on up.
Hello, good afternoon. School Board Chair, School Board Members, Superintendent Fritz, welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity to showcase the Enterprise Elementary students, parents, staff, and community members. Your ability to empower and guide decisions for Volusia County Schools is greatly appreciated. Likewise, we realize that the help of our parents and community members is invaluable. At Enterprise, our goal is to ensure that each student and their family, along with our school staff, feels supported, listened to, provided for, challenged, and motivated. In order for you to visualize our school community, we've brought our team to you. Please enjoy this short video of our school's progress and success, which was created by Ms. Dysinger in the audience. I just wanted to thank her. Following the video, our students and staff will entertain you with a short portion of We Are In This Together, a song from The Jungle Book.
From humble beginnings, Enterprise has always been a school of the community. The first school in Enterprise was located in a building on what is now DeBerry Avenue near Elizabeth Street. The teacher training school vacated the old county courthouse in Enterprise and was moved to DeLand in 1888. In 1900, the elementary school moved into the empty courthouse. A new two-story building was constructed in 1917 and was named the Enterprise Grade School. Enterprise welcomed elementary students to campus. In 1964, during a severe thunderstorm, the original two-story building was tragically struck by lightning and was destroyed. But in true Enterprise fashion, the Methodist Children's Home and the Episcopal Parish House were used as temporary classrooms until renovations could be completed. By 1971, Enterprise Elementary was serving 569 students in kindergarten through sixth grade. And by 1980, the school enrollment tripled to 1,441. The new schoolhouse would have many of our current faculty members who were students at the time. In 2014, the Enterprise Historic Preservation Society took on the challenging task of moving the main schoolhouse off campus in a memorable day for our school. This rich academic excellence remains on our campus today, following the mission of our school community, which is to foster academic achievement and a positive self-image in all of our students. Hello, I'm Alicia Douglas, the proud principal and instructional leader of the Enterprise Rockstars. This year, Enterprise has a unique set of challenges that are consistent with most schools in the nation. At Enterprise, our staff has showcased power in writing our own destiny. Each rockstar plays a role in the success of our school. Our teachers and parents inspire and push our students to learn. They support our students with resources and strategies, showing them how to rise above our current circumstances. They help support Enterprise by ensuring that their child remains on track and has a solid understanding of doing the right thing. At Enterprise, we have high expectations. We have chosen to be bigger than the obstacles of this pandemic and the learning loss that our students have encountered. Through the individual efforts and commitment to one another, we've created a safe and supportive environment that values ambitious instruction and collaborative teaching. We are pioneers, innovators, problem solvers, team players, and most importantly, a family. To give you a clear picture of what Stronger Together looks like, let's hear from the Enterprise team.
Hi, I'm Coach Stiltner, and I'm one of the PE coaches here at Enterprise Elementary. I live all the way over in Fort Orange. It takes me 35 or 40 minutes to get here every day, and I will do it for the rest of my teaching career because I love it so much. We love Enterprise!
My teacher says I'm a scholar, and she helps me with the reading counts.
I've been here 28 years. I love the children. I came here when my children were little here at school.
I like that a lot of my friends are here, and my teacher can help me when I'm struggling in math.
I'm Mrs. Chris. I'm a student intern and enjoyed learning from all of them on how I can be a better teacher.
PLC time at Enterprise is when teachers come together as a team to dive deep into the data of our students and discuss the four essential questions. What do we expect students to learn? How will we know when they've learned it? How will we respond when they don't learn it? And how will we respond when they already know it?
This is a time when we reflect on our students' progress, reflect on our teaching, collaboratively to ensure we are meeting the needs of all our students to be successful. These weekly group meetings create a space for us to work through problems and celebrate educational victories together. PLC at Enterprise fosters a collaborative, positive school culture, leading to increased teacher efficacy and student learning. Enterprise Elementary teachers inspire each other, work together, because when teachers learn together, students learn more. Enterprise teachers and students are not just part of a professional learning community, they are part of a family, because together we are stronger.
Okay, my name is Virginia Dawson. I have worked here at Enterprise for 45 years this year. And one thing I like about being at Enterprise is the family atmosphere. And I love the fact that we work together as a team, and we have a community that is caring. So I chose to stay at Enterprise because I enjoy all of those factors.
Say that I love Enterprise because it's my family away from my family. Everyone is so supportive and friendly and kind, and you know, we have just our own little caring community where we help one another out, and we're always there to support one another, and that really means a lot when you're thinking about an environment that you have to report to every day and work in. So I would have to say that aside from the students who have my heart, I love Enterprise because it is my family away from my real family.
We have students who reside in a foster care setting due to neglect, physical, sexual, or emotional abuse. The students from the Florida United Methodist Home are very mobile. Due to the higher levels of supports the students need, we take our time getting to know each student. Some examples of challenges these students encounter include sudden changes in their placement, feelings of abandonment and frustration, witnessing their siblings being separated from them, and dealing with the emotional effects this has on them, as well as some positive outcomes we've witnessed, such as students being adopted and being allowed to remain on our campus. I am proud to say that we are there for our students, no matter what the situation may be, and give them all the love and support they need.
My first experience at this school was last year at kindergarten orientation. During kindergarten orientation, I signed up to be a member of the PTA. Being on the PTA board, I have since worked with Ms. Douglas on numerous projects. She is always the first one ready to get her hands dirty. She is a mentor for many of us and a leader to all of us, and she leads by serving with passion for what she does, a love for the people she serves, and the highest standard of excellence that is motivating and contagious and evident in every one of her employees. Enterprise Elementary is not just a school building to me. It is a village and my family, and my husband and I are so thankful to be a part of it.
We would like to thank our VCS Curriculum Department and VCS leadership for joining us in our instructional efforts. We hope you enjoyed getting to know our family. We are the Enterprise Rockstars, and we are stronger together.
Walking through the shadows, out here in the night. Just need some hope for tomorrow, we will be fine. In the middle of the valley, when you're looking for light, I'm right behind you, I'm with you, time after time. I got you, through and through, cover me, I'll cover you, I'm staying by your side. We are together, together in this, together and strong, and never alone. We are together. together, together in this. Together we're strong and never alone. We are together.
We will give a moment for Enterprise.
That was awesome, Enterprise. Woohoo! Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming tonight. Come on in and find a seat. Thank you. 5.01, recognition of African American History Month. Dr. Prince.
Mr. Prince, come on up.
You like the shirt today?
I do.
Yes.
Goes with the Jungle Book, too. Yeah. Yeah. Just that.
Well, good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah. All right. The teacher in me never goes away. Thank you. I'm so excited. I'm so thrilled to be here. I'm so excited that we've committed ourselves to really recognizing African American History Month and year round. We have some fantastic presentations that we're going to do. Dr. Fritz, thank you, Madam Chair, Board. I introduce to you Deltona Middle and Ms. Feltner, and they're going to show a fantastic project that they worked on at this school.
Thank you. Madam Chair, distinguished board members, Dr. Fritz, welcome home.
Thank you.
I appreciate this opportunity to highlight the talent and passion of some of our Deltona Middle students. This presentation will highlight the digital art students in Ms. Holter's digital art class with a special background choral event featuring Mr. Anderson's boy choir singing the National Negro Anthem. As I move through the slides, you will see the impact each chosen figure has had on the students as they share this person's importance in their lives in their own written words. I'm not the tech person. Things about my job is I learn something every day, and these kids teach me something every time I walk into a classroom. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Superintendent Dr. Fritz, Madam Chair, board members, and the entire Volusia County Schools community. As the proud principal of Pine Ridge High School, I am grateful for the opportunity for my students to come and share their artistry with you this evening. And again, as a proud principal, I have the unique privilege of being able to enjoy the talents of all of my team members, and I have an awesome team member that I've invited to come here tonight to tell you a little bit about the selection that our students will be singing for you. Our academic coach, our lead sponsor of our African American History Club and STEP team, and our lead organizer of our Black History Month activities at Pine Ridge High School, Ms. Edwina Timpson.
Good afternoon, school board members, teachers, principals, and guests. Pine Ridge High School thanks you and Mr. Prince for the opportunity for our memorial choir under the teaching of Mr. Peralta to sing the Negro anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing, otherwise known as the Negro Anthem. Before the anthem became a song, it was actually written as a poem. In the year 1900, James Weldon Johnson penned a poem to honor a white man. As a second-generation black man who never knew the indignities of slavery, Mr. Johnson wanted to remember the courageous actions of another man who made such a difference in the lives of black Americans. And that white man was President Abraham Lincoln, who on February 21st, 1863, made a nation-changing decision to abolish slavery. President Lincoln had come to the profound moral realization that slavery not only dehumanized those who were enslaved, but also those who enslaved them. To celebrate African American History Month, Mr. Peralta, the choir director, and I sought to be a healing force on our campus. Under the theme of We Are the World, our hope is that the words these children sing today find a place in all of our hearts, that we not take for granted the liberties and the rights that we enjoy as Americans and be good neighbors to one another. Let us all lift our voice in thanks as Pine Ridge High School Choir lifts every voice and sing.
Hello, I'm Pine Ridge High School representatives, and my name is Janice Bernardo.
I'm Jacob Leon.
Jose Graves.
Jay Amante.
Jeanette Lee Rosado.
Natalie Rosado.
Tiana Fowler.
Jay Tertiata.
Valerie Santana.
Angela Sanguero.
We study music history in class, and this semester we learned about African American spirituals born in the plantations of the early American South. We learned about how black culture has informed and influenced American music and society since the very beginning, analyzing the racial tensions in old America so we can better understand the tensions present in today's society. As a diverse school and diverse group of young adults, it is important for us to discuss these things to find what unites us. Despite our apparent differences, we are proud to offer our rendition of Lift Every Voice and Sing. Thank you and enjoy.
It is custom to stand.
Talented students on all levels, elementary, middle, and high, doing wonderful things.
Thank you. I am so excited and so thrilled
that you guys throw yourselves behind stuff like this. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Prince. One more time. Thank you. And thank you very much to Pine Ridge. Pine Ridge High School, I remember when it was built. Best thing we've done, huh?
Yes.
Okay, 5.02, recognition of the winners of the school bus safety poster and PSA contest in recognition of Love the Bus Week. Dr. Fitz.
I'm going to ask Mr. Moyer, and is Sheriff Chitwood here?
Nope.
Well, we have Sheriff Chitwood, good, better looking than younger. Come on up.
He had a meeting last minute, so he's out of town tonight till tomorrow. So.
We know a lot about substitutes, and you're just a great one. That's okay. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Nice job, Pine Ridge. Great job. Yeah. Beautiful. Ms. Cuthbert, members of the board, Superintendent Fritz, thank you for allowing us to have just a few minutes this evening with you for a two-part recognition, as you made mention. In October, we did a formal resolution with your approval for National School Bus Safety Week. While tonight, I want you to meet the award-winning students who've now participated in the poster and public service announcement portions of the annual Safety Week. In addition, I'm also pleased to announce and inform you that this week has also been deemed Love the Bus Week as we show our appreciation to our bus operators, attendants, and bus mechanics for their dedication and hard work throughout the year. As you take a look at the four-minute video here in just a second, you'll see two things, two parts. The celebration of past Love the Bus Week, so to speak, as well as evidence of the student artwork. I'm also passing around for you to take a look at the artwork as well. The real stars tonight, however, are the students. There are superstars tonight because they have captured our attention with their talent and creativity, and will be receiving cash awards in just a moment as sponsored by the Volusia County Sheriff's Youth Foundation for their work of excellence in portraying this year's theme, Be Safe, Know the Danger Zone. Mr. Aiden?
Thank you.
walking and riding, follow all these rules to stay safe. Always stop before crossing the street. Never run across the street. Always use the crosswalk. Always wear a helmet. Always look both ways. Choose a safe route. If you see a car coming, don't try to beat it. Never wear headphones. Know where to go. Always try to walk or ride with a friend or parent. Know life, be bright.
Hello, and today I'm going to talk about safety when walking and biking to school. When biking to school, make sure you wear a helmet and walk your bike across the street. When walking, make sure you look both ways when crossing the street, even if there's a crossing guard. Be safe. Know the danger zone.
See, this is how you're not supposed to cross the road.
Make sure you look both ways before you cross the walkway and make sure that the safety guard lets you cross.
Thank you. Hope you enjoyed that. Here with us to help us this evening in the absence of the sheriff is Carla Kwan, Director of Juvenile Services, and Chief Tim Morgan, who will bring welcome, say a few words, and then they're going to hand out some cash. Would you like to say a word or two?
On behalf of the Board of Directors for the Volusia Sheriff's Youth Foundation, we are excited to sponsor this event every year, and we have sponsored this event for over the past 10 years, and we look forward to doing it every year, and it's just a matter of making that phone call and saying we're ready, and we're ready to be there and be supportive of our youth. And as me being the Director of Juvenile Services for Volusia County, I not only work with bad kids, I work with all kids, and I believe that we make a difference in their life every day.
Speaking for the sheriff, as you all know, he's an avid bike rider. I am also an avid bike rider. I love to ride bikes about 200, 300 miles a week. I'm glad to see the children involved and are practicing safe practices. Nothing worse than hitting your head without a helmet. Believe me, I've done it a couple times. We really appreciate what you do. And every year we run an operation, especially with the school buses. And some of these there, you know, it's a two-week operation. We use undercover cars, trying to protect the children. A lot of people, they simply just forget, and they go around, and there's nothing sadder than going to a school crossing or a crosswalk where a child was hit, or going to a bike crash that we're trying to put them back together if they just had a helmet on. So great work by all.
Thank you. Now, we invited our six award winners to join us here this evening. Let's take a look to see who was able to join us. In the poster contest winners, the winner is going to get $300.
Wow.
Yeah. Let's see if our first place from New Smyrna Beach High School, 10th grader, Max Cornett. Let's see if Max is here. Max, if you're here, come on forward. If you have a parent or guardian, please stand. Kristen Greger and Principal Tim Merritt. Congratulations. Second place in the poster contest, also from New Smyrna Beach High School, 11th grade. Mr. Merritt is still the principal. Teacher in this case, Ms. Curry, Anthony Trent.
Go Cougars.
Third place. This case representing New Smyrna Beach Middle School, 7th grade, where the principal is Sabra Farajala. Teachers Miss Hughes, Jasmine Kraslowitz.
Go Stingrays.
Congratulations. In the public service announcement contest, first place coming out of Spirit Elementary, 3rd grade, principals Carrie Devaney, teachers Joanna Elliott and Amy Shank, Jack Elliott.
Love that tie.
Second place in the public service announcement category, also from Spirit Elementary, 4th grade. The teacher in this case is Kelsey Maldonado. Let's see if David Elliott Roberts is with us. That's the guy who designed that where the eyes move. You know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Awesome.
And in third place, it was a collaboration there at Taylor Middle High School, where, of course, principal is Kathy Gibbons, the teacher is Leah Pudding. Let's see who's here. Jaira Gonzalez, 12th grade. Emily Shands, 11th grade. Jennifer Mendoza, 12th grade. And Micah Smith, 12th grade. Let's see who's here. Congratulations, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, gosh. They just might have gone out the door. They might have just left.
Sister Moyer? No?
Good evening. Come on in and have a seat. We're going to, at 6:30, we're supposed to have certain public participation. We wanted to wait until the poster contest was finished. So we are going to continue with public participation, 6:30 certain at this particular time. And then we will continue with 5.03 in just a second. The first, when your name is called, you're going to come to the front dais. Please speak into the microphone so we can all hear you here in the boardroom as well as at home. You have 3 minutes in which to speak. Our agency clerk, Ms. Lieben, will be timing you, and I will ask you to conclude after 3 minutes. The board will be listening to you. We will not be responding. Please, when you come up, state your name and the area from where you reside. So I'm going to name Ms. Jessica Hayton first, and then coming up after her will be Dr. Maiklin. Jessica Hayton, please come forward. She's not here. Jessica Hatton. Okay. You're more than welcome to come to the dais to speak for public participation. You have 3 minutes. Please state your name and the area from which you reside.
My name is Jessica Hatton. I reside in Daytona Beach. Dr. Fritz, board members, I'm a VE Mild self-contained 3-5 teacher. I addressed this board in November, and at that time, I advised you that I had administered 28 district assessments, all on grade level, even though my 3-5 students are reading 2 to 3 years below their grade. Please do not forget that in order to be in my class, students need to be 1.5 to 2 years behind academically. I thought I would update you. As of today, I have administered 90 district assessments. I also told you that I'm required to write progress reports for both interim and final grading quarters. As of today, I have had to write progress reports addressing a total of 350 goals. After my addressing the board in November, I received an email forwarded by my principal saying that the ESE department wanted input from the ESE teachers to help make the progress reports easier and that they wanted to form a committee of teachers to help find a solution. I was very excited and immediately added my name. The email said they would get in touch with us and the first meeting would be the week after Thanksgiving. Since I never heard anything, I emailed Amanda Wiles on February 10th to find out what was happening and who the members of the committee were, since I was not chosen. She emailed me back and told me that she must wait for a form to be completed in focus before a committee can be formed. I would love if one of you could explain to me what type of form needs to be in focus before you can speak with the teachers. I have to believe that the ESE department never had any intention of meeting with us. Next week is Read Across America, and in most elementary schools, teachers will be reading books by one of the most famous children's author, Theodore Geisel, also known as Dr. Seuss. One of my favorite books is Horton Hears a Who. In this story, Horton the elephant hears a faint cry from very special people. They are different from the other people that live in the land of Newell. They're very small in size and number and have special needs. Until Horton, no one ever heard their cries. But Horton stopped and listened. He knew that he needed to help them. He knew that even though they were small in size and number, that a person's a person no matter how small. This book reminds me of my students. Dr. Fritz, our self-contained classes might be small in number compared to the gen ed population, and our students have different needs. So we need a Horton that will stop and listen to our voices. We cannot forget that IEP means individualized educational plan. Someone needs to stop and listen to the students when they are reading at a kindergarten level and you put a third grade reading assessment in front of them. When you ask us to test them at the same pacing as gen ed students, even though they are not prepared, that is why they are in our class. Please find us a Horton that is willing to listen to our cries and the frustration of the teachers when we ask our students to do something they are not prepared to do. I am asking you, Dr. Fritz, no, I am begging you, please find self-contained students a Horton.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hayton. Dr. Macklin, and then after Dr. Macklin, Travis Sargent. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Dr. Michelle Macklin. I reside in DeLand, Florida. Student learning should be our utmost priority. In order to prepare learners for success in a global 21st century economy, we must do a better job of providing time and opportunities for students to process and practice to achieve proficiency. It is important to remember that learning is a lifelong journey. While it is important to measure growth, not all students grasp concepts at the same rate. Sometimes it takes more time for learners to acquire foundational skills that are needed to support future learning. As a former elementary teacher that has transitioned to middle school, we're doing our children and society a grave disservice because our children are moving through school, but they are not being prepared for life. I equate it to a train moving with no passengers. The curriculum keeps moving whether the students learn it or not. Our district test score underscores this truth. When district assessment scores continue to fall below the REA proficiency level of 70%, something is clearly wrong.
Yet, we just keep on moving and doing what we've always done, expecting a different result. That's defined as insanity. Not only are the assessments released inaccurately, but in some cases, like today, they're scored incorrectly. And unless caught and reported at the school level, it results in lower student achievement scores. And no one comes back and says anything when those scores impact teacher decisions. At what point do we stop making excuses and start making changes that benefit the youth we serve and have been entrusted to prepare and lead to govern our future? We have to do better. We're failing them at a great rate. And it is up to us to make a difference and a change. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Manklin, for coming this evening. Mr. Travis Sargent, and then Carol Sawyer.
Good evening, Madam Chair, school board members, and Dr. Fritz. My name is Travis Sargent of Ormond Beach. Not only am I a parent of two young boys, I am a voter working with other Ormond Beach parents, voters, to have our voices heard and save our only beachside school. I'm here today to request fair treatment of Ormond Beach regarding the discussion on Osceola Elementary and hoping to help you make a better overall decision. I believe working together, we all can learn good lessons about the following. Sunshine public records laws, half-cent sales tax promises, making sure residents get due process when it comes to important decisions. It's very important that you, as a governing body of school system, be good examples of the proper ways to follow the rules and make good, fair decisions. Sunshine issues. It's clear the sunshine laws weren't and still aren't being followed. Some of you admitted that at the last meeting, by admitting faulty notice, K-5 or K-8, not closure. The good news is there's a clear solution, a properly noticed, fair meeting that allows Ormond and Daytona reasonable notice of a decision to close one of the schools, and an opportunity for all interested parties to present their comments to make the best decision with all the information made. This is the cure for any possible violations allowed by law. When you make a mistake, you fix it. A simple, properly noticed hearing does that. When the voters of Ormond Beach voted for the half-cent sales tax, Osceola was clearly listed as a project for rebuild or renovation, not to be taken away. It is a bait and switch to advertise a tax that guise of a renovation and then later switch it to a total closure without proper notice or even following your own policies on a sales tax. Due process is a fundamental constitutional cornerstone of our American form of government. Two of the most important aspects of due process, reasonable notice and the right to be heard. Both of those were denied in the decision, and that is why the public is upset with the process and the ultimate flawed decision. Again, a properly noticed hearing fixes this. There are over 600 signatures on a petition to save Osceola. Please listen to the voices of the parents and voters. We are asking the board to do the right thing, make a better decision, have a properly noticed meeting to remove any sunshine law issues, and then instead of giving Daytona Beach two $24 million schools, simply remodel Osceola and Ortona as originally promised, allowing each community to keep their beachside elementary schools. This is a win-win for both communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sargent, for coming this evening. Ms. Carol Sawyer, and then last will be Ronald Jimmett.
Well, I'm just going to be more positive and upbeat.
Good evening, Ms. Sawyer.
Good evening, Chairwoman Cuthbert, board members, and Dr. Fritz. My name is Carol Sawyer. I reside at 246 Golf Club Drive, New Smyrna Beach. First, I'd like to say welcome back to Dr. Fritz.
Thank you.
And then I'd like to thank Dr. B over there for filling in for you while you were gone. Since I am a bus operator for Volusia County Schools, it's only befitting that I say a few words about transportation during this week designated as Love the Bus Week. When Mr. Moira was appointed as the new transportation director several years ago, our transportation employees had many different reactions. As you can see from the video, Mr. Moira is full of life and full of energy, and he has transformed all that excitement into our department. He's always working on something to build the morale in our department and keep the excitement going. The management team, originally known as the Sweet 16, but now it's the Elite 18, and the union team have built a great working relationship over the years, working together for the betterment of our transportation department. On behalf of all the bus operators in attendance, I would like to say thank you to our bus mechanics that faithfully keep our buses rolling down the street, always going over and above for us. You are much appreciated. And I would like to say thank you to all our bus operators and attendants that transport our students. We put on many different hats, and we never know which hat we will need each day. You are much appreciated also. And to our students, I would like to say, I would like to quote what's on the back of my T-shirt. We will start our day while you're still sleeping. We will make our priority your safekeeping. We will pre-trip our buses inside and out before we ever begin our route. We will greet each one of you, your morning faces. We will drop you off at all the right places during our trips to school and to home. And we will keep you clear of the danger zone that we saw in one of the posters. To end, I would like to give a big shout out to our schools. They are showering our bus operators and attendants with gifts as we bring in our students to school each morning this week. The schools are doing an outstanding job in making our transportation employees feel appreciated. Student Transportation Services is the best place to work. Thank you.
Thank you. And then Ronald Jamek, please. And I apologize if I've mispronounced your last name, sir. Good evening.
Good evening, Superintendent Fritz, school board members. I'm Ronald Junk. I'm a senior at Pine Ridge High School. Proud to be there. And I just want to thank you all for bringing an HVAC academy to the school and all these hands-on academies that are real-world things. You know, it really does show. The Healthcare Academy at Pine Ridge is a great academy. My sister graduated several years ago from there and graduated with her CNA license, and she's now working for Halifax Health in Daytona. And it really means a lot, you know. And I urge you to bring more academies like this into Volusia County. It's really good to see, and I'm thankful for all of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Go Panthers. Thank you. That concludes public participation for the good of public education in Volusia County at this time, which was 6:30 certain. Let's continue now with 5.03, recognition of Spruce Creek High School and DeLand High School students for being named National Merit Scholar finalists. Woohoo!
Dr. Sparger and Dr. Carr, come on up front. These are your kids. Come on up front.
All right. Good evening, Madam Cuthbert, board members, Superintendent Dr. Fritz. It is our great pleasure to recognize Scholar Award winners tonight. These students have earned the recognitions tonight based on their academic performance. National Merit Scholar semifinalists. This award is presented to students based on their PSAT, NMS, QT scores taken during their junior year. This award is sponsored by the National Merit Scholarship Corporation.
National Merit Scholar Semifinalist from DeLand High School, Evelyn Meckley. Our next Haskell, and he's from Spruce Creek High School. And Jennifer Russell from Spruce Creek High School, and actually we just found out that she was selected as a finalist for the National Merit, so that's an awesome achievement. Evie was also selected as a finalist. That's awesome. Pretty cool.
You want to get a picture of this?
Sure. Next, we present the Hispanic Scholar Award. This award is earned based on PSAT and MSQT scores taken during junior year. The Hispanic Scholar Award is sponsored by the Hispanic Scholarship Fund.
So this student, unfortunately, was not able to be with us, but we still want to recognize the fact that she received this award. Her name is Amelia Houston from Spruce Creek High School. And again, you know, we're sad that she wasn't able to join us, but we're very proud of her accomplishment as well.
And next, we present the African American Scholar Award. The award is presented to students based on their PSAT and MSQT scores taken during their junior year. The African American Scholar Award is sponsored by the Jackie Robinson Foundation.
And we have two students in this recognition. Nolan Felty was not able to attend tonight, but we do have Gabrielle Butler with us, and she's right here.
We are extremely proud of all of our students. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you all for coming. See you in the schools. See you at graduation. 5.06 recognition of an Ormond Beach Middle School teacher. Dr. Fritz.
Ms. Tootin. Come on down.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, Chairman Cuthbert, school board members, and Dr. Fritz. I am Susan Tootin, and I am the proud principal of Ormond Beach Middle School. It is with extreme pride that I'm here to celebrate Ms. Demchuk's state recognition as a Math Counts Coach of the Year for the entire state of Florida.
Woohoo!
Ms. Demchuk's dedication to this extracurricular competition is outstanding. She has been doing this for many years and has grown the interest in our student body while developing true problem solvers and fostering the impact of student-led collaboration as a strategy to succeed. Mathematics aside, the skills Ms. Demchuk is developing in her students contestants will surely empower them to continue their love of the learning, competing, and struggles these sometimes bring. I am not sure there is a better venue to encourage these students to stretch their capabilities than with a math coach that believes in them. The Math Counts competition has certainly been a winning endeavor under Ms. Demchek's direction for the students and the families of Ormond Beach Middle School. As stated earlier, it is with great pride that I am here to be a part of Ms. Demchek's recognition that is so deservingly earned. Now I'd like to turn the mic over to Ms. Savannah Brock, who will bring forth some words from Ms. Kristen Perkey, Math Department Chair at Ormond Beach Middle School.
Good evening. Oh, excuse me. Into the microphone so we can hear, not only here in the boardroom, but at home as well.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Perkey, the Math Department Chair and Math Counts co-coach, could not be here tonight, but asked me to share the following with you. Math Counts is a national middle school mathematics competition that builds confidence, improves attitudes about math, builds problem-solving skills, and fosters achievement through fun competitions. We would like to enthusiastically congratulate Natalie Demchek as the Math Counts Coach of the Year for the state of Florida. Natalie has been teaching math for 18 years and has been a Math Counts coach for 15. She has demonstrated an outstanding ability to challenge, meet the needs of, and encourage all students who participate in Math Counts at our school. She sets the tone for a welcoming atmosphere while inspiring them to do their best, as can be seen in the amount of times our teams and individuals have placed at the regional level and gone on to participate in the state competition over the years. So again, congratulations, Natalie. I cannot think of anyone more deserving of this honor.
Ms. Demchek, can you come up, please? Ms. Demchek, I just have to show this. This is the cutest plaque ever. It's like an old-fashioned chalkboard that has little chalk pieces on it that say Ormond Beach Middle School and then has her recognition on
awesome.
Here.
That's
the best part.
Really nice.
Yeah.
Mr. Persis? Mr. Persis? Mr. Persis?
Sorry, you want to
join me?
Mr. Persis?
Oh, yeah.
I thought there was a roof here. I'm
going to. Yes. Please tell her congratulations from us. Our next recognition is one that I'm very happy to announce because I have two seniors, grandchildren that were able to participate in this, so I'm very, very grateful for this recognition. 5.07, recognition of Stacy Tremont. Dr. Pritz.
Ms. Wade's making her way up here. Thank you.
Just a moment, I have a PowerPoint that I want to pull up and play while we're talking. Thanks for joining me. Oh, I hope my glasses don't fog up too much. This is hard. Good evening, Chairman Cuthbert, school board members, and Superintendent Fritz. I am Nancy Waite, and I am the facilitator for the Volunteer and Partnership Programs. And tonight, I have the pleasure of introducing Mrs. Stacy Tremont, who created and managed a Facebook page called Adopt a Volusia County 2020 Senior. This Facebook page has over 10,500 members and highlighted the success of thousands of graduating seniors who were adopted by the community members. As a mom of four children, Mrs. Tremont understood the class of 2020 seniors lost the opportunity to experience all the traditions they had looked forward to for 13 years
because of a global pandemic. No homecoming, no prom, no graduation parties, no yearbook signings. She demonstrated compassion, determination, and resolve to make sure Volusia's class of 2020 seniors, all 4,000 of them, were celebrated. Mrs. Tremont will tell you this was a community effort, but the truth is, this Wonder Woman is the one who created the avenue for the community to join together and celebrate our seniors. In the midst of a pandemic, when we were all feeling hopeless and sad about the possibility of not having graduation ceremonies, she created the Adopt a Volusia County Senior Facebook page. This allowed the community, including individuals, businesses, and organizations, to learn about our amazing graduates and celebrate all their major milestones. Parents posted pictures and a story about their special graduates that spoke to the hearts of community members who adopted these students. Thousands of community members adopted one or more graduates and pledged to send a letter, a card, a gift card, a snack, or just even posting a note of encouragement. Anything to let them know how proud they were of their accomplishments. It quickly caught on and garnered the attention of local news stations, as well as the national media. The Live with Kelly and Ryan show donated $5,000, which was used to adopt 48 seniors. With the remaining funds, randomly selected seniors were surprised with laptops and carrying cases. Mrs. Tremont, like so many of us, recognized the impact on our graduates of losing traditions, but she stepped up to do something about it. I was one of the many people who adopted a senior. I actually adopted two, a brother and sister. And I can tell you that being a small part of this big effort was so rewarding. When these students received their gifts and read the words of encouragement from strangers, they responded with complete astonishment that people, most of whom they did not know, would take the time to acknowledge them and all of their hard work. They posted pictures of themselves smiling with all their presents and thanking the donors who sent them. This was one of those win-win situations. Hats off to Mrs. Tremont for finding a way to make things a little more bearable for our seniors and providing the community with an outlet to channel their well wishes to the class of 2020. I've been waiting a long time to do this. Mrs. Tremont, on behalf of the school board of Volusia County, please accept this award in appreciation of your generous spirit and determination to ensure every Volusia County 2020 graduating senior felt loved and appreciated.
Everybody. This is actually, I'm humbled and honored to accept this on behalf of everybody who did invest in our seniors on the 2020 page. It was nothing short of extraordinary to see just complete strangers pour into our seniors in such a time of uncertainty. I'll never forget it. I know they will never forget it. I will say, because it was such a great success for them, I am very excited to announce that we have started the mission for the 2021 seniors. I'm so thankful that we have this platform and opportunity to do more for them. They have missed out on not only their senior activities, but junior prom. So these children have never gone to their prom. Again, times of uncertainty are upon them. We know they will come out stronger. We can do more for them. Thank you again, Nancy. Thank you, everybody. And let's go do more.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. 6.01, Ministerial and Ceremonial Resolutions. Up next, Volusia County Schools is delighted to highlight resolutions of the 21 through 08 through 21-14.
which our students, teachers, and staff will celebrate throughout the months of February and March. Dr. Fritz, which resolutions will you be recommending for approval today?
The superintendent recommends approval of 2021-08, recognizing March 8th through the 12th as National School Breakfast Week. Superintendent recommends resolution 2021-09, recognizing the month of March as Youth Art Month. The superintendent recommends 2021-10, recognizing March 2nd as Read Across America Day. The superintendent recommends 2021-11, recognizing the month of March as Music in Our Schools Month. The superintendent recommends 2021-12, recognizing the month of March as Theater in Our Schools Month. The superintendent recommends 2021-13, recognizing the month of March as National Athletic Training Month. The superintendent recommends 2021-14, recognizing February as Career and Technical Education Month. For more information about these events, I encourage the public to go to our webpage and look at our social media pages about these events coming to our district.
Thank you very much, Dr. Fritz. 7.01, public participation complaint concerning items on our consent agenda.
Need to vote for those resolutions?
Oh, gosh. Do we need
yes.
to vote? Okay. I apologize. Thank you, Mr. Colon. Is there a motion to adopt these resolutions?
Motion to adopt the resolutions as presented by Superintendent.
And I'll second it.
Okay. It was the first motion was made by Mr. Colon and seconded by Ms. Jamie Haynes. Any further board comments on these resolutions? Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say nay. Resolutions have passed. Thank you. And thank you once again, Mr. Colon. We're definitely a team. 7.01, public participation concerning items on the consent agenda. Ms. Schultz, do we have any?
No, we don't.
Thank you very much. 8.01, are there any recommendations of removal of items from the consent agenda? Seeing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Motion to approve consent agenda.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, the motion has been made to approve the items on the consent agenda by Mr. Colon, seconded by Mr. Persis. Any board discussion? Seeing none, all those approved, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say nay. Motion is carried. 8.03, we've already done. 9.01, that we do not need that. 16.01, superintendent's announcements and comments. Dr. Fritz.
Yes. On March 2nd, next week, Tuesday, we have NEA's Read Across America Day. Our next regular school board workshop will be March 9th at 10 a.m. in this boardroom, and the next regular school board meeting will be March 9th at 3:30, also in this boardroom.
Thank you, sir. 18.01, human resources update.
I'd ask Mr. West to come forward. And Emma. Is it right here?
Good evening, board members, Dr. Superintendent. Thank you so much for having us come up and share just a little bit of a human resources update that we have tonight. I've invited Emma Field to come up and share. I know that we've had a few exciting things that have gone on, and Emma's going to share some of those things tonight with us. And so I'm going to turn this over to her.
All right. Thank you. All right, one of the... Since I got to HR, a couple of the things that we've been working on are things that were long overdue. And one of the first things I recognized and heard a lot about was how complicated our application system was. My vetting team spent a lot of their day assisting people through an application process that had 18 tabs and could sometimes take about 2 hours to complete for a lot of our employees, or some just didn't finish. We saw a large number of applications that were begun and just abandoned. So one of the things I've been working on is simplifying the use of the application system. And so I've put a couple of slides on some of these. You will see that there is now much less verbiage on every one of the tabs. There are now only 5 tabs. And like I said, there used to be 18. And there isn't any duplication of the information on them. That was a big complaint we had between the employment and the references. There was a lot of duplication involved. So literally now, the first tab is just general information. It's the most basic information. It's a person's name and address, their street address, a few questions that we do have to ask, and the ability to attach their resume or other items right on the very first page. The next tab lists their education, and it's all their education together. There's no separate one for high school and for college and for certifications. All of anyone's education or certification all goes under the education tab. The general employment history has been cut to the bare bones minimum. We want to know where you worked, what was your position, when did you work there, and is it your current employment or a previous employment? The references now are, again, super simple. Who was your employer? What was your supervisor's name? What was your title while you were there? And how can we contact them to get a reference? And then finally, we have our little legalese. They put check marks in a couple of boxes. They say, yep, I'm good with this. And they are immediately taken to their current vacancies. I've had people test it out, and people have said it takes about 5 to 10 minutes to complete the application. And my vetting team are now able to do the job we hired them to do, which is to vet our applicants, which has allowed us to actually get people started much sooner. I've seen people who have put in a new application, and some of them able to start. If they're on the ball, if they get their drug tests, they get their fingerprints, which are now in-house, I've seen them be at work in a week.
That's remarkable. I'm sorry, I talked out of turn.
That's okay.
Thank you for that. We're okay with you making that comment.
We are. Are there any questions you have that you'd like me to respond to?
I saw Mr. Cologne first and then Mr. Persis.
Does it start off by asking your Social Security number?
It doesn't start, but it does ask your Social Security number, and we, of course, do have to have it for an applicant, but it isn't the very first thing they see.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else, Mr. Cologne?
Yeah, where is the question on there about have you ever been arrested?
I actually spoke with Mr. Hovis, and a lot of those questions we had are not really required because we do a background check. And what Mr. Hovis told me is that if they indicated there was a problem knowing they were going to do a background check, we would then have to look at them prior when they just answered the question, and then we'd have to look at them a second time when we got the background check. So we didn't feel it was necessary. We just let them know that there is a background check, and we investigated at that time.
Well, as you know, this is very, very important.
Yes.
So tell me who does the background check and what kind of background check we do.
Okay. So I'll jump in here for just a moment.
Sure.
Of course, we do a fingerprint check. Every
yes,
one of our employees are fingerprinted. And that's the background check that we do. It's based on the criminal
record. Before they are recommended for a position?
Yes.
Yes.
Before they're recommended.
Correct.
So we get fingerprints cleared before the person can put their name in for a vacancy or after they've been recommended for a position?
Before they're actually recommended to be hired, a background check is done based on the fingerprint at that point.
Okay,
so
we cannot recommend someone unless we have their fingerprints back and they're clear.
Correct. And so, Mr. Persis, what this also does is prevents, if a person mistakenly puts down on their application, mm-hmm. no, I have not been arrested, but then they might have been, the actual question is, have you ever been
convicted?
And then there's some questions that come into play on arrest versus convictions and that kind of thing. And it goes also back to to all kinds of history. What we found is that a number of the, we were wasting a lot of time in disputing the actual fingerprint with what they put on the application. And we disqualified people based on what they put on the application versus what their fingerprints were, because they didn't tell the truth, or they weren't clear on what the directions were. So what we decided was, do away with that, and we're just going to have a fingerprint check, and that in that case, we don't have to kind of test them on whether they knew they were really arrested or convicted of offenses and that sort of thing.
Okay, and so, is the fingerprint check the state of Florida or national?
National.
It's the national.
Mm-hmm. Yes. National database?
It's, yes, yeah, sir. It's FBI check, and then any state they've lived in would be checked.
Okay. Yes, what do we do when you do the reference check and the person says, I can't give you any information other than the date the person started and the date the person ended, mm-hmm, which is customary, as you know, mm-hmm, in a lot of HR places. They, mm-hmm, won't tell you, was this person a good employee and all those kinds of things. They just say what they are told that they can say. Mm-hmm.
We keep digging. We do ask for the references, a minimum of 3 over the last 10 years. So we're looking at their 10-year work history. And if a person absolutely has every employer, or maybe they only had 1 or 2 employers, and it's their policy, we try to, you know, make them think about other persons within that employment, perhaps, that would be willing to give a more detailed reference. So we, I mean, that's part of what our vetting team does. We really try to assist the schools with getting those references for them because we know they're really busy.
What can we do to avoid having a person apply and get hired in Volusia County that was let go in other school districts because of perhaps professional standards violations, but they resigned before there was anything on their record? So if you called, it might just say they resigned, or they tell you the date that they left, but not the reason, mm-hmm, or anything related to the reason, because it's not on their record.
So there is statute that every district is required to report to the professional standards, PPS, at the state level. In the state of Florida. Now, if they, you know, had a situation that, let's say, occurred in North Carolina or something like that, it's some additional research that we would have to do in addition to that. So part of what we've tried to do is balance the idea of streamlining and not making it as cumbersome for the applicant, because we go through and we do our process. We do our fingerprint checks. We make sure that we do background checks. We have our vetting team that goes through and checks references to make sure that they have the appropriate number of references. We're following board policy where appropriate. And I say where appropriate because if a college student has just graduated, they're not going to have a 10-year history of employment,
right,
clearly. And that was kind of the hang-up on the hold-up, I'll say, of what was happening is that we found that some folks, a stay-at-home mom, might have worked for a number of years, stayed at home for a number of years, and then come back to want to,
exactly,
be a teacher. And so there was a gap there. And what that does is that kind of throws up a red flag, and it brings everything to a halt. Mm-hmm. So that slows up that process. But our vetting team has been able to kind of cut through some of the red tape, find out a lot of that information. We still want to do our due diligence, and we're always going to also, we tell our principals every single time, reference check, reference check, reference check. Do your due diligence, principal, to hiring manager, or whoever that is, to do your own reference check as well. And there are things that come up when we find out certain things, and we do have to take actions, we have halted those actions. So we've just tried to put in place the process because we've heard from you. We've heard from the FADS HR study that they did of trying to streamline those processes to make the process as quick as possible, while at the same time doing our due diligence to make sure that we're catching everything we can as far as reference checks and those background checks and things.
One of the, and I'm giving you, I don't mean to be giving you a hard time,
That's
but
okay.
No.
This is very important because we have had instances in this county, as have other counties. The real slippery person is, without being critical of in general, but substitutes. Substitutes can get around the system because they're not full-time employees. They're not evaluated, if you will, formally. There's nothing in their record other than what a principal might say or a teacher might say about that person. But you can have a substitute do bad things in other districts and then come in and apply here. And when I say bad things, I'm talking about, you know, almost criminal things. And they don't get caught, and they go from one district to another before any charges can be pressed, or it just comes to the surface. So I think we have to have our radar up.
Absolutely.
When people have those type of jobs, we got to have our radar up. When you have an employee that started in August and only lasted till November, boom, went to another district, started in January, was let go in April.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
right.
If that's not a red flag,
yes, sir.
I don't care what they say about him or don't say
right.
about her. We don't want that person, probably. And
right.
So I just think HR people, you know, got to be in tune with some of these things that aren't real obvious, maybe, to a new person coming in.
Right.
But for you, Mr. West, you know, Dr. Fritz knows, we all know who have been around, the pattern to look for.
Right.
So I just don't want us to hire somebody, get somebody in front of children that we really do not want
Absolutely.
There. And shouldn't have ever hired in the first place. So whatever safeguards. I love the new system. I love it. It was terrible before. It took forever to get through it. And as a principal, I was so frustrated that I lost so many employees because they just couldn't wait long enough for the reference part or some other piece to come in, and they just got hired by another district, which could move it through faster.
Yes,
I think all that's good, but at the same time,
absolutely.
At the same time, we certainly don't want to let our guard down so far
right.
that we let unscrupulous people.
Mr. Persis, you said something that I just have to throw it in because I think you and I've even had this conversation. I'm going to test my staff. How many references are you supposed to check?
Three,
exactly.
Yes,
because three will give you a good picture. We're going to do a really good job going in this spring. In fact, I'm going to make sure that I say that at our principal meeting next week. It doesn't matter the position, because three allows you to triangulate a story. When I called and checked on Nate today, for example, I talked to his last three administrators, even though he got glowing recommendations from John Copeland, without a question. But we went farther back, and I think that's a training component in the HR world that we've got to get to. It doesn't matter what we're hiring for. We really have got to check references, and we've got to check different references. And that's something I pledge to you that we will start to really hound with our folks, because I think
right.
I've gotten some great information in the past when I've been able to do that.
Yeah, that's great.
And I will say, if I may, about Mr. Persis with substitutes, you bring up a really good point, and I'm going to tell you, Sandy Hovis is going to laugh when I say this, but he always tells me we have an EPC committee that meets every 2 weeks, and it's a review of every applicant that is reapplied and that has any kind of flags or anything that thrown up and that sort of thing. And Mr. Penley and Mr. Hovis and I sit down and go over those. And the comment is always, okay, if for any position they're coming in, because I always ask, what position are they coming in? It doesn't matter. Once they're in, they're in.
Yeah.
So if it's a substitute, it's a teacher, it's a principal, it's a superintendent, we're going to go through the same process and make sure that we're, reviewing that.
I think
that.
You guys even called my mom.
So, yes. Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ben.
Thank you, Matt.
Okay. Mr. Clone, do you mind? Do you have a rebuttal for him, or can we finish the round and I'll call you back when the ladies are finished? I'll call on you just as soon as we take care of the ladies. Ms. Burnett, would you have a question?
No, I don't.
Okay, thank you very much. Ms. Haynes.
Yes. So, first of all, having had to be on the other side of this and not, you know, help people fill it out, wait on missing information, you know, go through the process of interviewing, and then it taking sometimes 6 weeks to hire somebody, and then you've lost the person you wanted because they couldn't wait. I appreciate this. I'm happy to hear that you have streamlined it. I kind of wanted to know how the fingerprinting, you know, piece is working out, because I was a proponent of, like, bringing it in-house, because I felt like that was another piece that was slowing us down. And so now that you've brought it in-house, can you tell us a little bit about, like, how that's working?
It is working. So it's been a learning curve, you know, just having the software and the computer and how it works and all the different types of fingerprints we do. But we started January 2. We've done several hundred already. We do the volunteers. We do the support. We do the instructional. And we also do the vendors. We have a different price scale for each of those, and we sometimes get results back in less than 24 hours. We've noticed the only day of the week that it's sometimes, if people get their fingerprints done late on Friday, sometimes we don't get them till Tuesday. But typically during the week, if they do them on Monday, we've typically got the results Tuesday. So and we actually do it at the same time as we're calling the person in to do their orientation, so they don't have to make multiple trips either. So we've developed an online booking system where they go to a site, they pay before they ever get here, they choose the time slot, they coordinate it with their orientation, and they come in and they can be in and done with both things in an hour.
So if I may, Emma's being very modest. Okay, because we started this on January 2nd, and I don't know, has anybody heard any complaints about the fingerprint process? Okay, then. That tells you right there. As soon as Emma gets her medical doctorate degree, I'm going to go ahead and bring in the drug screening, and we're just going to get it all done right here. She's going to be the MRO, and we won't have a problem with anything. So, no, she's done a phenomenal job with the fingerprinting.
And to tag on to that, and thank you, I'm happy to hear that we're in-house now and we're doing it, and that the process, because that was another piece, you know, and so that's flowing a lot easier. And it always hinges upon the person that wants the employment, too.
Yes.
You know, like, they have to do their part.
They do.
They can't, you know, step back and wait or whatever. One concern that I've had there, and I've had it for years, is, like, the cost. And I heard you say something about it's kind of on a staggered scale based on what they're applying for, and part of that is because I know even with our own AVID program, you know, we are trying to encourage college students to come in and be AVID tutors, and, you know, to ask a college kid to put up money to get fingerprinted and drug tested to get cleared to come in to be a tutor when the program really says that's what you need. You need college kids to do the tutoring in those programs. I know that that has been a barrier at times, because when I used to help try to find kids, you know, college kids that would come in and do that, one of the things they said was, I just don't have the money to pay for the fingerprint. So have we yet looked at or considered, and Dr. Fritz, you know, this would probably be more towards you, but have we looked at a way to help those kids get the fingerprinting and get in the door, and then maybe attach it to, like, their payroll piece?
Yeah.
So that we don't, because there are some great college kids out there, but they just don't have an extra, you know, whatever even the sliding scale amount is to pay to be able to come in and tutor.
Yeah, I think that's something for us. I think that's certainly something for us to investigate. Mark and I have actually had that conversation. I've suggested taking out of his pay, but he didn't like that. I hear your point. When you're coming out of college, we were all there. Putting together $67 is tough. So we'll look into that. That's something that I think is reasonable. I know other districts in the past have, you know, they've taken it out of their first check or first couple checks to kind of make it less painful. So
that's a good point. And my So to piggyback on that, my thought would be also for substitutes, because for the last couple of years, as I've been out and about, anytime I attend a meeting, you know, a city council meeting or whatever, I've kind of tried to encourage individuals, you know, to come and do the paperwork to sign up to sub, so that we can get more people, you know, that are active on that sub list. But that's also somewhat a deterrent sometimes for those people that are coming into sub, that that's a lot of out-of-pocket expense. And so I just, you know, I didn't know if we could have some kind of contract with them that, you know, if we allow the fingerprinting piece up front, then, you know, you've got to make the commitment to sub this amount of time, or, you know, something like that. I mean, I'm all about looking at options. And so, but I am so thrilled that all those hundreds of questions are gone. Because even on this side, you know, on the other side of it, like scrolling through to find the information that you really needed to know,
yeah. Right.
There was just so many pages of information that
there was.
You didn't need to know. It wasn't friendly. You know, you asked them to get references, and references were uploaded, then you didn't use those references. Like, it was a lot of time. So I appreciate all the work that you've done at, and I'm happy fingerprinting is in-house now. So thank you.
Like I said, we've also done a training. We've implemented. We have a 4 times a month clerical institute. Mm-hmm. And this month, we went over how to use SearchSoft. Now where to find everything on there. And we've asked a representative from every school and department to attend. We do 4 sessions. We do a morning and an afternoon on 2 different days of the week within the month. And I work with professional learning, help set that up. Yep. And that's been really key to letting people, and we also record it. So if they can't make 1 of the 4 meetings, they can also get asked for the recording, and we send that to them.
Mr. Cologne?
So Carl took me back to a very ugly time when I was sitting in the audience, and we were talking about the gentleman from Tallahassee. Mm. You know,
yes.
This is something that the board has brought up over and over again. And I actually saw this happen this school year, where we had a teacher last year who wasn't great, almost hostile, ended up resigning, became a substitute teacher, then started to work at different schools and applied to become a teacher and was hired by a different school. Mm-hmm. And so do we ask on this application for the sake of the principal who's hiring, have you ever worked for Volusia County Schools?
It is on the general information tab. Have you previously worked for Volusia County Schools?
And so do we ask who your... So if I am a principal and I am hiring this person who I am desperate for, let's just, mm-hmm. you know... This is where we are.
Right.
Okay. How do I know that that person was a horrible sub at ABC High and that the principal basically said, I don't want you to come back because this... How do we reconcile that so that a principal can go back? Because, you know, once that principal found out that another principal had hired this person, it was like, well, I wish they would have asked me because I would have told them, no way. Mm-hmm. So have we closed that loop so that principals are able to refer to each other and say, hey, what was the issue you had? And then they may make their own conclusion. Maybe it was a personality issue. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was just a straight up. But have we closed that loop?
Well, the vetting team does look at the complete work history and look for any gaps in the work history, so we should determine where that person has been, and it's always best practice. My vetting team will do that if they're asked to, or they would call a school to find out if a person. We have the flag system, so we can see if a person is non-reappointed.
Right.
We also can block a person. Sometimes if a school asks for us to block a substitute, we do specifically ask them why, so we are aware of it. If it's just not a good fit, or if they've done something, we actually ask to have a paper trail for that person, and we would get Sandy involved if we need to, just like we would any other employee. If there's a good enough reason that you don't want that person back, then why would they want to go to other schools? So we do look into every case of that.
But the hiring principal is able to see that you were a teacher at ABC and that you were allowed to resign, because that's the way it works. Right. You were given the option to resign, and so at that point everybody kind of goes, see you later, have a good future, and then they pop up again as a sub. And what was ironic about it was that, this is really crazy, the person was not brought back as a teacher, it was resigned, but then became like a permanent sub at that same school. So it was kind of like you were okay, you weren't okay
to be a teacher,
to
but
be
you're
a teacher,
okay to be a sub.
But now we're bringing you back, and then eventually they got a job at another school, unbeknownst to, and like I said, going back to that other principal, was like, man, if they had asked me, I would have told them, no way.
So a couple of things, and Emma mentioned it, but kind of glossed over a little bit. We have a flag system. So that means that there's an HR flag and there's a professional standards flag that we put on the application system that actually pops up if a principal is looking at that to actually hire that person. So the HR flag could be for a number of different things. If they've been non-reappointed by another school, of course, that's pretty obvious, and that HR flag will pop up, and if I'm a hiring principal, I'll look at that and say, wait a minute, there's an HR flag here, so I'll call HR and say, why is the flag on here? And then Emma's able to say, well, this person has been, you know, Mr. Colon was non-reappointed at, Deltona High School. And then so that principal will know. But you said it earlier, we're kind of in desperate times, so principals might call other principals. And I've always told principals, do your due diligence, as Dr. Fritz said. Make sure, particularly if they've been in our own county, pick up the phone and call your peer. I would call Mr. Persis and say, you know, did this person work with you at Tomoka Elementary? I noticed that they were there and that you non-reappointed them. You know, why? Well, it wasn't an elementary person, but, you know, he might be a high school person, that it might be a good fit. So there's a lot of that process. But the initial part that we do on the vetting piece is we do our due diligence to make sure with fingerprinting, with reference checks, we're doing that minimum part. You know, if your kind of situation of what your hypothetical said, it might be the case where they may not obviously have any kind of felony or any kind of legal thing that pops up due to fingerprint, that they may not have been terminated. Their references may be all in place, but if they're just kind of cruising along the edge and that sort of thing, they could possibly get through the vetting team. But that's when we talk to the principals about doing their due diligence and following up on references.
And the situation with the one that we had, that Carl almost came out of his chair and through the roof, I'll never forget because I was here. It was, the person was a teacher and was borderline creepy. And so it was goodbye, see you later. And then he popped back up as a sub. And so it was very unfortunate, you know, something he did much after he left us. However, it was said he was a former teacher and then became later a substitute. And we figured out that there, and I'll never forget that meeting, we figured out there was no way for the district to know, you know, that that principal thought the guy was just creepy. I'll just say it like that. And so, you know, I think that, you know, it's garbage in, garbage out. If we're not ensuring that the principals report the information correctly, because arguably if I'm a sub, if I'm a principal looking to hire somebody, I have no idea where you've been. You've been everywhere. And so if, you know, and a lot of times it's the path of least resistance. You know, that guy looks a little creepy. Goodbye, see you later. They may not have done anything wrong. They just were creepy. I mean, I hate to say it that way, but, and so that's what we figured out. There was no closed loop. There was no way to, for that principal to even know that this guy was even subbing, because the guy is no longer there. He's no longer a teacher, because he was a contracted teacher, I believe. He was in his probationary period. So they said goodbye, part ways. He became a sub. Probably never, obviously never went back to that school, and it never hit a flag. So we just, need to add some flags.
I think perhaps the fact that now our system is a little bit different, where we have an HR representative who has specific schools, has really enhanced that relationship, and we have that open communication with them now. And I think we didn't have that before. So we have, you know, five HR reps. One has the districts and the others have schools. And they are talking to them much more frequently and asking how each of those people are doing. And maybe, you know, I hope that that's something we have in place that we didn't have before that perhaps helps that relationship.
Thank you.
We will do. I promise that we will make sure that we do a really good job educating our principals and assistant principals. I had a belief as a principal. I really did. I felt like as a leader and a principal, I knew I had assistant principals, but there was something that I was really responsible for. When someone was going to come work in my school, I made them the offer. And when it was time to sign their final evaluation, I'm the one that did that. And when it became time to fire somebody, I was the one that did that. I didn't pass that along. Mark and I were schooled the same way. We're going to make sure that we train our principals on that. We're going to make sure that we say, and we're going to give them questions. One of the questions you should always ask when you're hiring somebody is, would you hire this person if they came back to you? How would you feel if they were teaching your child? And so we'll school our principals. I think some of the problem, Mr. Clone, that you're describing is our principals, they are desperate. They want to fill their positions, but they're not seeing the forest through the trees, and they're not seeing the big picture, and they may not know the right questions to ask. One of the things that we're going to do is talk about integrity. You have to look at your peers when you go to principal meetings, so don't lie to them about somebody. Be upfront and be honest. And I think a lot of that is building the culture. Ms. Burnett, you and I have had a lot of conversations about culture. That's a professional culture that we need to establish here in Volusia, and it's going to start with the top. And so we'll make sure that we stand in front of them next week, and we'll say it multiple times. As you go into hiring season, do your due diligence. Make sure that you have somebody that you feel comfortable, if your own child was there, that you hire them.
Madam Chair?
Yes, briefly.
Because Mr. Cologne, I'm just not sure I heard the answer to his specific question, and that was, I think we got it pretty well covered, teacher to teacher, last year, wherever you worked. It's that teacher who, for whatever reason, is not teaching any longer and decides to become a sub. In that application that they fill out for us to be a substitute in Volusia County Schools, is there anything that, any question that is asked that when they say, have you ever worked in Volusia County Schools? Now, even though that person may have only worked for 2 months, they would have to say yes to that, right?
Right, and we would check.
Okay, and then if they say yes, and then they put down from when to when?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so then when you see that very short period of time, less than a year, then at that point, do you check with that school to find out if there's any reason why? You know, why did this person work less than a year? And then, because you guys could stop it right there before, because the principal's not going to screen substitutes. Yes. I mean, that doesn't happen. I mean, they may get into them when they're not doing their job. Yeah. But we're so desperate for substitutes, anyone that shows up to fill, you know, you're in. Because we just assume you've screened them, and these are worthy people.
Right.
So, but what we're trying to say is there a measure to stop that person who was an unsuccessful teacher or maybe did some things they really shouldn't have been doing, and they should not creep their way back into the – I'll use your word, creep. Creep their way back into the system as a sub.
Right. So I'm going to say it this way. If we have first to answer your question, yes. On the application, it says, have you worked in Volusia County Schools before? There's a yes or a no. And that flags whether we check that or not. If they work less than a contracted term, that's a year for our teachers, let's say, and it's a teacher that they've been in there. Obviously, if they've worked for less than that amount of time, yes, that throws up a red flag to our vetting team that says,
gee, I wonder why they've let work less than they've must have broken their contract somehow. They could have been probationary and left for whatever reason and that sort of thing. But that sparks questions to go into the next level. So in regards to substitutes, I'm going to say, I hate to use the word creep factor, but the fact of the matter is that, we do rely on our principals, and as Dr. Fritz said, we're working to, and as Emma also said, communicate more effectively from the district office to the sites. We have our HR reps that are designated and assigned to the schools. That's for consistency purpose, so if they have a question, they handle that school completely. They're the ones that are constantly working with them and that kind of thing. So if there's a substitute that's not working somewhere, that's going to go to the HR rep. The rep's going to flag that, and it's going to come in, and it's going to be documented there as well. So, I mean, there are a number of things, systems that we've tried to put in place to catch that along the way. But I'm just going to be honest with you. There's no way we can anticipate everything and every action that everybody's going to do. I know the situation you're talking about.
Sure.
And the problem is that that person never had any kind of indication except for the creep factor, I'm going to call it.
Yeah.
And so you can only do what you can do there. So we're trying to do our due diligence in every possible way, and it seems to streamline. I'm sorry I've taken up so much time. We just want to run through these last few slides. Is that okay? Because we've got some other really exciting things that we're doing.
Yeah, well, that's fine.
So, thank you.
What you're holding up is not dinner, but a break.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
We're going to go really fast.
I'm just warning you right now.
Yes, please.
You know, we're going to go really fast. Okay. Another exciting thing is,
yes.
I know for years, I know when I first got here, it's like, why aren't our job descriptions on our website? Every other,
thank
I look
you.
On Seminole, I look on Orange, I look on other ones. We didn't have our job descriptions on our website. Well, now we do. And
yes.
They are super easy to search for. You can literally go to the VCS home webpage. You can just type in the word job description, and it is going to come up. You can put in the search field what you're specifically
hallelujah.
Looking for.
Hallelujah. Preach it, sister.
And you can find, there are hundreds of them. I mean,
yes.
It was a little bit of work to transform
yeah.
them all into Word documents and making them all as individual PDFs and get them all up there, but they are all up there. Every single active job description we have is on our VCS website.
So, yeah. And moving along.
And it also lists kind of what salary scale they're in and
yep.
a link to the salary schedule. So that's not a mystery either.
Yes.
These were our vacancies as of yesterday.
Yes.
Our numbers, as you can see, for the instructional, we've got the biggies are the 22 core teachers, 9 elementary teachers, and then a smaller number of each of the different ones. We are, you know, working daily with schools to find the best candidates. We're hoping to graduate some interns here shortly and grab some of those up. And so we really are working with the schools. Something else I've started doing is meeting with our departments once a month. I meet with the Schoolway Cafe. I meet with the Transportation Department. I meet with the Operations Department to see how human resources can support them and get them the people they need, not just instructional.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, just a little bit of data to share. I know we keep hearing about, you know, this is a very challenging year, and it is, but I love to look at the data. And as you can see, we have definitely had more people resign or leave this year over fears of COVID, and you know, that's lamentable, and we can't help it. But it isn't as bad as I expected when I started looking at the data. We actually we've had fewer people so far this year retire, knowing that we'll have some retire at the end of the year. But if you look at the data, we've had, you know, a little bit, 110 less. So if we have even 110 more retire at the end of the year, we're equal to prior years. The leaves have, of course, been more, and right now we're in the process of sending out the letters to determine which ones are, what their plans are. Do they plan to come back? Do they plan to continue their leave of absence? Or are they going to resign? So like I said, right now the total is 812. That's, you know, considering we have about 8,000 employees and we have, and what we're going through, like I said, I don't, you know, it's not ideal, but it's not as horrible, I think, as it can be. All right, yeah, so I know subs comes up a lot, and we look at it all the time. So we started this year with about 550 active subs. Those were subs who really were coming to work for us. There was a large number of people who have a sub record but really were not subbing for us. So we've had 2-star trainings every month, and we're up to about 850 subs now. On a daily basis, we have about 400 to 550 job postings. We have a really good fill rate for ones that are planned. It's on days we have a lot of last-minute call-offs. Mm-hmm. Some of that is schools that don't bother to put in the job posting. They just do something on their own. Others are just they have a large number that come in at the last minute. And overall, since August, our overall average fill rate is 87%. That may seem, you know, that's obviously 13% are unfilled, which is not ideal. But I actually have spoken to surrounding counties, and they say that their fill rates are around 70%. So we actually are doing a lot better than they are. So there's a couple of things that we have started doing just recently to try to improve that 13% of jobs that aren't getting filled. And part of it, I heard Ms. Haynes earlier mention that part of that involves school training, because we truly have some schools who never have, they never call us. They never have a need. They fill every single one of their subs. They have a beautiful relationship with their pool of subs, and they don't have trouble. Other schools constantly struggle to fill their vacancies. So something we're going to do is offer a training that's two-pronged that talks about hospitality, and I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to talk to them. I'm going to have schools who do a great job share best practices and what they do to be hospitable to their subs. And the other piece of that is them not being familiar with the SEM system. They don't know how to go in there and look and get a list of subs that have specifically said, I want to work at your school. Mm-hmm. And so that those two pieces will be taught in a training that will be very soon. Something else we're doing is I'm cross-training some of my employees across the board. Every single one of my team has another job, if not two or three other jobs, that they know how to do so that we're never shut down because that person had to take a day off. So I have my vetting team who are actually the support for the sub team, and they are taking on pieces of that because there's only currently one person doing subs, and that's a huge job. It really requires more than one person because she is not only putting all of their data in, doing the orientations, answering all the phone calls, answering all the emails, supporting all of those subs who are calling in, and it really does require more than one person, but that's all we have currently. And something we've put into, something else we've talked about, and you've talked about it previously, is we also have thought about what kind of incentives could we have for subs. And a big one of those is reimbursing them for their screening fees if they work X number of days. We've written that into ESSER, and we're hoping that that is approved. And we also would like to offer bonuses for subs who come to work a certain amount of days per month, so because we know the pay isn't great.
Thank you very much.
Okay, hang on. Any questions? Any other questions? I just ask a few, and you don't have to answer now because it will require some data search. If you could just have it for us for your next update, I'd be greatly appreciated. I see there's a lot of instructional vacancies, and a lot of times we have more vacancies in our middle schools than high schools. Could you distinguish if middle from high?
Okay.
That would be very helpful. That might help us understand
Is it the younger, more changing student that needs more attention? That would be very helpful. And also, how many of these vacancies are true vacancies, and are these vacancies being held right now by long-term subs? Or are there more vacancies that have long-term subs that principals are not looking for a certified teacher at this point?
Well, we've asked them. We keep if a person has a true need, we have spreadsheets of every single job code at every single school. Mm-hmm. And so if there is not a person filling it, then it is a vacancy.
Correct.
That's a certified teacher. So even if there is a sub sitting in it, then it's still a vacancy, and correct, we leave the vacancies open until they are filled.
Correct. So those are true vacancies, Ms.
Yes.
Okay, that's wonderful. And also, when you get your contracts for the leaves of absence, can we have an update of how many?
Yes.
You said there were 227. How many of them are returning or
right,
retiring?
Right. The first letter is due back on February 28th, and the second, and a second letter, we sent an email. We sent a snail mail letter, a first letter that's due February 28th. We will send a second certified letter that will be due back by March 12th. So we should have the data after that.
Okay, that's wonderful. And also, is it possible to determine which schools require the most attention when it comes to substitutes? Is there, I know you look at your own training of the substitutes, but is there any training at the school level? Mm-hmm. I mean, is there, like what Ms. Haynes spoke up before, the tax collector brought him in and talked to her own staff. Is there anything that human resources is doing to go into that school to say, this is the protocol you should follow when you have subs come in that maybe would help it? Maybe it's a discipline issue that they, a sub, because I've subbed before, and if you don't have support and discipline from the main office, and if they don't come down and help or come by and see you, then it's, you know, you don't want to come back.
Right. That's definitely, like I said, we'd like that to be our March Clerical Institute training, so mm-hmm. there would be, again, four sessions. We track mm-hmm. who does actually attend which schools, and we definitely want schools to share with other schools rather than HR telling them what works. Well, because some schools really know what works.
That's very true. And can we highlight those schools once a month?
Absolutely.
You know, maybe the substar school.
The
sure.
That, yeah,
ooh, substar school of Volusia County, stronger, you know, the stronger sub school, substitute.
We'll,
if we can
we'll
do an
alliterative.
Sure. Some kind of celebration. And, you know, elementary schools especially love to be highlighted. So if we celebrate the positive and be proactive about it,
sure,
maybe others will follow suit.
Yeah. We can definitely do that.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you. Anyone else? So if I think of more, may I call you sometime?
You.
And we can talk?
Okay, yeah,
that's
sorry.
Fabulous. Okay, as of right now, it is 8 o'clock. I'd love to have a 10-minute break so we can visit other locations in the building. All right, see you in 10 minutes. Thank you. Oh, tonight.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Anytime.
I tried.
It's 2 minutes. We have a digital clock.
I like a digital clock. We should look at the clock on the computer.
We're all ready?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, welcome back. It's 8:10. We're going to continue with our board action items. 20.01, resolution number 2021-7, Florida reimbursement resolution. Dr. Fritz.
I'm going to ask Mr. Jay Glover, managing director for PFM Financial Advisors, and Laura Howe to come forward, as well as Don Fortas. Not here, she's not here.
Yes, Laura's not here.
Okay, how about Lisa come forward? Lisa, would you come sit up front as a representative for finance? Thanks.
I'm Don Fortas.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I thought you said, I'm sorry. I apologize. I thought you said, I'm not Don Fortas. I thought sure
no,
you were.
I'm sorry. Good evening, Dr. Fritz.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, school board members. The board will be incurring debt and to finance capital improvements in the very near future This reimbursement resolution will allow the district to be reimbursed by the future tax-exempt financing for certain capital expenditures incurred 60 days prior to the adoption of this resolution. This is Jay Glover from PFM Financial Advisors.
Madam Chair, School Board Member, Superintendent Jay Glover from PFM Financial Advisors, LLC, the district's financial advisor on debt-related matters. As I think most of you all recall, last year we had some lengthy discussions about borrowing debt in this very historically low interest rate environment to help accelerate some capital projects. And as part of those discussions, I think you all gave staff and the financing team direction to move forward with preparing for an $80 million COPS financing to fund capital projects. As part of that process, this is sort of an administerial step that we take at the outset that allows you to reimburse yourself from proceeds of that future COPS issue in case you end up spending any funds on these projects prior to the issuance of the debt. So this does not obligate you to issue the debt in any way. It just gives you flexibility under the IRS code to reimburse yourself if you do have some expenditures prior to the issuance of debt. So this will give you that authority. And I just, as a point of, I just wanted to give you an update on kind of where the market is related to this debt, just so you all know. As I mentioned, the final decision at the school board meeting last year was to issue $80 million worth of debt. At that point in time, we were talking about an all-in true interest cost of about 1.80% or net interest cost of about $9.3 million on that $80 million worth of debt. I'm pleased to tell you that actually interest rates have declined since that date, despite some volatile conditions over the last couple of weeks. If we were entering the market today, you would actually be borrowing closer to 1.35% interest rate, which reduces your net interest cost to about $6.7 million. So despite all the stuff that's going on globally, it's still a great time to be borrowing money. So we're preparing this transaction, and this is the initial step that you all would need to take. Assuming we still want to move forward, we plan to come back to you all as the school board and the leasing corporation on May the 25th to consider approval of the bond resolution and the leasing corp resolution. And then we would look to get into market shortly thereafter for a closing in July. And I think that's to meet the need for funding that your capital facilities people have put before us. So with that, I'm happy to address any questions you all might have.
Ms. Haynes.
Okay, so you said you're going to come back on May 25th with the idea of getting into the market in July. So we don't know at this point what the interest rate's going to look like in July. So, and I know it could go a little lower, but did we ever think it would even go to 1.35%? No. And remember, I like to be fiscally responsible, so should we move into the market sooner than later?
It's a very good question, and there's a number of things, obviously, we consider, because whenever you borrow money from tax-exempt bond proceeds, you have to have an expectation to spend those monies within a certain period of time, and that's generally within 3 years. So we don't want to go in too early such that we can't meet your spend down over that period of time. But to the extent when we discuss with capital facilities the ability to spend that money, we might be able to move that up a month or so. But we're trying to kind of time the best time to get in the market with also the ability to spend the proceeds within a certain period of time. And that's really why we initially thought July would be a good time to get the proceeds, because I know there's a lot of planning and bidding going on related to the projects. And I think they thought it would, you know, fit within that 3-year time frame after that. But to the extent there is the ability to accelerate that, we can explore that as well. But it probably would only be about a month or so at most we could accelerate it. And keep in mind, we would actually try to lock the rates probably in early June, and then the actual closing wouldn't be into July. So we're talking about locking interest rates in early June, hopefully, based on the current schedule.
So what do you anticipate? I mean, and I know you don't know because it has been volatile lately, but
yeah, I would tell you if we were borrowing, 2 weeks ago, the rates would probably be a little bit lower than they are today. We've seen the U.S. Treasury rates and also municipal bond rates move up probably, 15 to 25 basis points over the last 2 weeks. Will that continue? I mean, it's hard to tell. I don't think economists are projecting dramatic increases in interest rates over the next few months. You know, could they trickle up? Yeah. But, you know, as I sit here today, if we thought there was going to be a dramatic move in interest rates, we would definitely be talking about accelerating this financing. So I think it will, if it's you all's direction, we can go and regroup and see if there's a potential way to kind of accelerate the financing. One thing we might be able to do is bring it back to you all for approval, say one meeting earlier potentially, and then have everything ready to go into the market at the most advantageous time, which gives us a little more flexibility.
Thank you.
I hope I'm not promising something we can't do from a documentation standpoint, but we will definitely work on that and look to get it back to you for approval as soon as possible.
Ms. Burnett, do you have any questions?
No, I was going to ask about locking, and he talked about it. So,
okay. Thank you. Mr. Colon?
I support any direction, and so we'll have to bring it back, but I think if we allow, if we get the paperwork in place and the approvals, mm-hmm. then we can delegate that authority to the chair to carry it out. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ted, so that we're not holding up. And so if you start itching, you're not waiting for a, you know, 2 to 4 week window where you all can be ready to, you know, you're kind of locked, you're locked and loaded. Mm-hmm. You're just waiting for the right time. And so I would hate to think that we're going to be waiting for a board meeting or a presentation or even if it pops up. You know, we can plan it, is my point.
Okay. I have two concerns. And this is what we talked about. We were given graphs the last time this was brought to us, you came to us, the length of time it would take to pay it back. And this would be the third time, I believe, that we're borrowing. First of all, we did for Pearson Elementary and Chisholm. That was $40 million. And then, of course, we had to do George Marks and Deltona Middle. The next one, does anyone know who's here tonight? Have we the committed dollars already in the bank for Osceola Ortona? Or would this Osceola Ortona come out of this future money?
Osceola and Ortona.
It would have to be this one.
It would have to be this one.
Okay, so that's $24 million, correct?
Yeah.
That's already set aside. So this would be up to $80 million for future projects within 3 years.
Yeah, right? And just so you're aware, this reimbursement resolution does name certain schools. It does not limit yourself to those mm-hmm. schools, but the schools that are mentioned in this reimbursement resolution include Tomoka Elementary, Woodward Elementary, Stark Elementary, and Orange City Elementary. But when we come back to you with the full school board and leasing corp resolution, the you know final list of schools to be included within that $80 million will be part of that approval as well.
Okay. And how far out would this take? Because
yeah,
I think
so
we have 15 years from when it was approved, or is it 2019?
Yes, so the sales tax expires, I think, December 2031. Mm-hmm. So this debt's going to mature. It's scheduled to mature in August 1 of that same year. We looked at different kind of payback schedules. We might be able to shorten that 1 year, but given the size of it, we thought expanding it out, you know, a little bit further because obviously sales tax revenues fluctuate would be the best course. And that's consistent with what we talked about, you know, last time with the $80 million borrow. If we were originally talking smaller amounts, we were going to pay off a little bit sooner, but when we increased the amount, we extended that maturity out, but still to correspond with the final maturity of the sales tax.
Okay, so then we would have bonded ourselves out.
You know, not fully. I mean, if you wanted additional debt, you could, and just, you know, right now, if we do this financing as proposed, the aggregate debt service between your 2016, 2019, and these proposed 2021 COPs mm-hmm. that we talked about would be about just shy of $28 million a year through the next 3 years, and then it would drop down to about $14 million a year of payments. Mm-hmm. I think your sales tax collections are up over $40 million a year, even, you know, with the impact of COVID. So this still leaves you a substantial amount of money for one of two things: to continue using those excess monies for pay-as-you-go projects, Or if you get out in a couple of years and think it's right to accelerate some more projects, you could potentially be borrowing again when that debt service drops down from $27 to $14 million. So you do have capacity for additional borrowing if desired. But absent that, you would use those excess sales tax revenues for pay-as-you-go. So.
Okay, because in here, and probably Mr. Aiken, I might need you again, we don't have Terry T. Small in here.
It was covered from the other funds.
Okay, LCIF?
LCIF.
Okay, so, okay. And then I have to think of a high school in my district that desperately needs to be rebuilt, and that's Spruce Creek High School. High schools cost just about that, if not more, amount of money, and it's, I mean, in another 3-4 years, it will be 50 years old. And so, and I know it's on our capital plan. I'm a proponent not to bond us out and put our sales tax so limited that we can't build a high school, that Spruce Creek High School, that the city of Port Orange really needs a rebuild. That's our oldest high school, and it's it desperately needs it. So that's my thinking. I have to think, and not anything taken away from any of these schools, even Enterprise and Port Orange Elementary, as well as Ormond Beach Middle School, all need something done. I don't know if we can find other ways, but that is only my concern, that we would bond ourselves out so far. It would make, you know, who knows what's going to happen in a couple of years. And we are dependent on the sales tax revenue. I'm just worried about future revenue as exposed to what we're going to owe. So, and I think when you were here last time, I was against this because I thought it was too much money. So I'm the hesitant one because I talked about the board. Do not forget a high school that needs to be rebuilt in Port Orange. So. Any other comments from the board? Yes, sir.
And this resolution that's in front of us, I think it's a resolution. Yeah. This is what we did when we did the $100 million.
You would typically, I mean, it's not required, but you would typically do this at the outset of any financing process because it adds additional flexibility with no commitment. So
right.
There's, again, if you approve this and for whatever reason decide not to issue the COPS because something changes, this would just, you know, go to the garbage can and mean nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, and we can't issue any COPS until we come back before you for approval.
Jay, did I hear you right? You said that there can be schools associated with this, and then but there could be schools added.
Yeah, this is but not an exclusive list that's in here. The exclusive list would be part of your approval that comes back at the subsequent meeting of the actual bond or COPS resolution.
And so whatever we did, I don't know, let's say on the previous one, the $100 million one, I don't even know what those schools were, but whatever they were, can we add to it, to that $100 million list?
I mean, to the extent there's excess proceeds that aren't spent on the schools that are designated within that COPS, yes, you can add schools to the transaction.
You can add to it if you have excess money, but you have to do the ones you said you were going to do.
Yeah, keep in mind these COPS transactions are essentially real estate deals, so the security for the lender is actually the ground lease on the school, so they want to know that you're building the schools that you intend to build. To the extent you're able to build more, then that's okay, but you know, they want to make sure you're building what's in the actual COPS documents because they get, you know, there's a ground lease on those facilities.
Got it. Thank you.
And see, there's more to than just rebuilding the schools. We used some sales tax money to pay for the one-to-one technology for our elementary and secondary schools. Our high schools get $1.5 million for athletic programs. We also have other technology and other...
Sure.
Other, and safety and security is wrapped up in there as well. So I'm just, and you said this resolution is just for flexibility. There's no commitment at this time.
That's exactly right.
So
to the extent that your capital folks start spending money on any of these schools that they intend to build with proceeds from a future financing, we can reimburse ourselves from the actual issuance. It's all it's doing. It's not obligating you to issue any COPS or anything.
Okay. Mrs. Sneed, is there any suggestions you have or advice you could give us based on any of this?
It's actually Ms. Furtis. Ms. Furtis is right next to her. If you want to ask her, she's Director of Finance.
Okay, that would be fine. Go ahead, sir.
Ms. Furtis, sorry, you can feel free to answer as well.
I'm sorry?
You can feel free to answer.
Can you please repeat that? Ms. Cuthbert, your question?
Well, I was just concerned about our financial position. When you divide all this up into allocating that sales tax money that goes to pay for technology and then the budget, you know, what that goes towards, will there be sufficient funds from what you can gather? I'm just asking for some advice from the finance department. He's wonderful. I mean, I would probably buy, and I can't stand Beats, but I would buy Beats from him. And he's very clear and always very honest and transparent. And all advice he's given to us has come true, and it's been beneficial. So I don't doubt anything. I'm just concerned about our finances. So I just want to know what you guys think about this.
Right. I mean, this might be a better question that you could answer, but it's with regard to the sales tax fund where all of the sales tax collections are accounted for. The budget each year takes into account debt service. It takes into account the transfers to general to pay for things that have been approved on the sales tax list. It has reserves in it, too, from prior years. So the fund and the budget would not balance without taking all of those factors into consideration. So I don't know if you want to speak to the sales tax budget, capital budget, but as far as room to spend, then that is built into the budget. And then if you can speak to it further, the debt service, the transfers to general fund, and everything else is taken into account when the budget is built. So, you know, if you want to speak to the budget, you might be better prepared for that.
Yes, I agree. I think for the purposes of this exercise tonight, though you would have the flexibility to come back at a later point if you wanted to reprioritize, but as Don said, the budget was built with this revenue source in mind, and then there were projects that were approved to be funded, and all of the debt associated with the issue have been built in. Since the capital, you know, since we only approve a budget for 1 year, we look at 1 year. However, we do a 5-year capital plan, and we kind of try to look further out. But if new schools got added to the list that weren't included, then, you know, we would have to factor those. But as Mr. Glover said, there is some additional bonding capacity. So I guess if you're asking how we feel about it, I think that we feel confident about it.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to hear from all. And I think when you come back in May, we probably need the full exposure, how far it goes, and see what the rates are at that time. So you said you wanted to bring that in May, or are we doing this a month earlier?
We actually talked about potentially bringing it back a month earlier than that.
In April.
Yes.
Yes, so we'll revisit the timetable to see if we can bring that approval back to you all at a meeting before that May 25th meeting. So.
Okay. I just wanted to verbalize my concerns about future revenue problems. And not, because, see, I was part of the last bond, and I was at New Smyrna High, the old school for 20 years, the new one for 6. And then the last school I think we built was University High School, and it cost, what, 3 times? I mean, wasn't it in the 90 million when it was finally finished? And there were a lot of cost overruns. So, and then we couldn't build for, what, 5-6 years. It just kind of died because we bonded completely out, and we didn't have any projects. So I just don't want that to happen again. It would be nice, you know, if we continue to pay our debts so we keep our Moody's rating. And keep you employed, you know, with us, because I think everybody likes you here, and you're doing wonderful. I'm just being very cautious.
I understand.
Yeah, very, very cautious about all this. I just don't want to bond us all all pieces, and I have to fight for Spruce Creek High School.
So, Mrs. Cuthbert, when you talked about the technology piece, one of the things, and Clint is over there, Mr. Griffin, one of the things that did happen this summer that helped us with the technology and is going to continue to help us right now, they've already ordered and they've started receiving really what we need to go to one-to-one because of that money that came in, you know, this summer. So that also, like, we finally are reaching a point that we never thought we would, you know, see, that yes was built into this. But, you know how conservative I am when it comes to finances.
Yes.
But, you know, this interest rate is the best we've seen, and I don't know that we're going to see any better. But, you know, I go back to what they said, that if we look at the 2016 bond, the 2019, and if we bond this one for 2021, it's 3 years at the $28 million, but then it does drop to $14 million. And if we stay at 40-some million or even possibly go up by that point in time, because remember, there's about 1,000 people a day coming to Florida to live because our schools are open. You know, I would tell you if I didn't feel comfortable, and also I think because of the money that the federal government is going to, the next release they're going to give, I think we're going to be okay with the technology piece. But we've got schools, I mean, we've got schools still not even on this list. And I hear you about Spruce Creek High, okay, and that it's almost 50 years old, all right? But we still have some schools out there, like, let's just say McGinnis, okay, that we haven't addressed that are way beyond the 50-year-old mark. And when I hear, and I just have to put in a plug for this, the land high is way over 50 years old. It may have like a building on it that is under the 50-year-old mark, but DeLand High still has the original buildings at DeLand High. And it's not that I'm not fighting for DeLand High, but, you know, I just, we have to look globally. And I know you want Spruce Creek. I hear
perfectly
you,
understand.
But
So, Enterprise was built in 1897.
Yeah, we saw it today.
Understand.
Remember that. You guys saw the video.
I understand.
The one building is across the street, though, now is a museum.
Madam, that was Jamie's classroom.
Yeah. I just don't want to lose sight of that school. I really don't. So,
are you ready for a motion, Madam Chair?
Yes, I certainly am. Yes, thank you, sir.
The superintendent recommends the approval of Resolution 2021-07, Florida Reimbursement Resolution.
You've heard the recommendation from the superintendent. Is there a motion?
I move approval.
And I second it.
The motion has been made by Mr. Persis and seconded by Mrs. Haynes. If any more board discussion? All those approve, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those in not in favor, please say nay. The motion has carried. The resolution has carried. So thank you so much.
Thank
you for coming out again. Get home safely.
See y'all soon again for the approval.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you, ladies, very much. Okay, 20.02, board action item, White Fleet Replacement and Lease Equity Program. Dr. Fritz.
Okay, Mr. Aiken's making his way forward. Ms. Snead is already here. Is Jacob in the audience? Or is he not here? I know he's here for the workshop. Okay.
Yeah, Jacob, he's here.
Madam Chair, Dr. Fritz, thank you for being up here tonight. We had the workshop earlier today, so I think, you know, instead of going through all of that, again, if you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer. And Ms. Sneed's here as well to help go through this. She's been through this prior to coming on board with Volusia County Schools, and intricate part of the team as we discuss this strategy moving forward. So I'll turn it back over to you unless you want me to speak on any particular item on the White Fleet.
Okay, we can have the board action item by Dr. Fritz, and then we can get a motion and a second, and we can have board discussion.
Okay.
Superintendent recommends the approval of the 2021 White Fleet Replacement Plan through a hybrid purchase and lease equity program utilizing Enterprise Fleet Management, and the superintendent be authorized to take all necessary steps to implement that decision.
Okay, you've heard the recommendation by the superintendent. for our white fleet, say that fast three times, white fleet replacement program. Is there a motion?
I move approval.
That was, okay, Mr. Persis made the motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, Miss Anita Burnett has seconded the motion. Is there board discussion? Okay, I thought your presentation was very thorough this afternoon, and so that's a testament to your excellence, because we have no questions, which is so rare. But thank you. All right, all those in favor of the White Fleet Replacement
aye.
Program and lease. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. The motion is carried. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. 20.03, board action item. Approval of the salary schedules. 2021 proposed non-bargaining level 1 through level 8 and technical support personnel schedule. Dr. Fritz.
And Mr. West is going to fill in for Ms. Muller with Ms. Snead. Go ahead, Mr. West.
And Ms. Snead, obviously. Yep. So thank you, board members, for allowing me to come forward for you tonight to discuss the proposed non-bargaining level 1 through 8 and technical support increase. On December the 8th, the board approved payment of a 2.5% average raise for the non-bargaining employees level 1 through level 8 only and the technical support personnel. This proposal that I'm presenting tonight is for an additional 0.5% average salary increase, bringing the 2021 raise to a total of an average of 3%. This is in line with the negotiated increases for our bargained contracts, and the additional projected is coming out of the general fund. So,
okay, Dr. Fritz.
The superintendent recommends the approval of the proposed 2021 salary schedule for the non-bargaining levels 1 through level 8 and technical support personnel.
Okay, you've heard the recommendation of the superintendent for the salary schedules, 2021 proposed non-bargaining levels 1 through 8. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve the salary schedule for levels 1 through 8 as presented.
Okay, is there a second?
I second that.
Okay. It has been moved by Mr. Ruben Colon and seconded by Mrs. Jamie Haynes to approve this resolution, this recommendation. Any more further discussion? Mr. Colon.
I want to thank you for bringing this forward. This was a group who didn't hit my radar, but I'm learning, and so I appreciate you guys bringing this forward in the spirit of equity. So yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Colon. I think that reflects all of us. Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say nay. The motion is carried. Thank you very much. Congratulations.
Can I add, a lot of people like to know, they will be seeing this increase on their paycheck on the 26th of this month.
Oh, on the 26th. Oh, that's wonderful. That's Friday, 3 days. Okay.
Wow, that's
great. TGIF.
Our payroll department has worked very hard to make that happen.
Okay, thank you so much. All right, 20.04, board action item, approval of salary schedules 2021, proposed non-bargaining levels 9 through 17, and administrative staff schedules. Dr. Fritz.
Mr. West, take it away.
Thank you. So we're also recommending the approval of the 2021 salary schedules for non-bargaining, district staff level 9 through level 17, and school-based administrative staff. The proposed increase are consistent with our 2.5% minimum raise negotiated for our teachers. So it will involve a one-step increase and the remainder to bring up to a 2.5% increase.
Okay. Go ahead, sir.
Superintendent recommends the approval of the proposed 2021 salary schedule for non-bargaining level 9 through 17, school-based administration and staff.
You've heard the recommendation from the superintendent. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
It has been moved by Mr. Carl Persis and seconded by Mrs. Anita Burnett to approve this, this action item. Any further discussion? Yes, sir.
And so I'll say the same thing I said when we talked about the teachers, and it's that we seriously have to look at our compression issues and come up with a plan to address the issues we have, because when you look at administrative positions, as I did with teachers, we are underpaying other districts. And so, you know, I've shared this with the superintendent, but we need to start looking and see what our neighboring counties are doing for both teachers, staff, every position, and come up with a 3 to 5 year plan on how we can close that gap in addition to the minimum wage increase. So I'm in favor of this. I just think there's more to do.
Agreed. Thank you. Oh, and Ms. Schultz, there are no more public participation cards except for 20.05. Okay, thank you. I just want to make sure. Thank you. All right. It has been moved and seconded, and we've had board discussion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. The motion is carried. Thank you very much. 20.05, approval of the 500 hybrid teachers stipend, school year 2021, quarters 3 and 4. Dr. Fritz?
Yes, this is, board members, you'll remember that we were doing our Volusia Live instruction quarter 1, quarter 2, and that we compensated those teachers to do both. The board gave us very clear direction to go back and see where it was appropriate for us to separate those and where it was appropriate to have regional instruction. Going forward, the secondary has been a challenge to do that, I will share with you. Therefore, it's a recommendation of the superintendent that we continue quarter 3, quarter 4, supplementing those teachers that are still doing Volusia Live for $500.
Okay. Before we continue with the motion and Dr. Fritz asking for us to vote, I would like to call Ms. Elizabeth Albert to the dais. She does have public comment, 3 minutes to address this agenda item.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board, Dr. Fritz, members of the audience. So thank you for allowing me to speak, and it will be brief, not even 3 minutes. I can tell you that I'm sure the majority of you remember the wee hours of the morning when the original vote to provide that $500 stipend for quarters 1 and quarter 2 were passed. It was the right thing to do then, and passing this tonight will be the right thing to do as well. I know that there are some fiscal conservatives amongst the group, and I appreciate that as well. However, this really equates to $11 a day, about $1.50 an hour, and it is a very wonderful gesture and token of the appreciation of the work that's being done. But my goodness, as Mr. Colon said, you know, they're deserving of so much more. So thank you for bringing this forward, Dr. Fritz. I know that there is money coming down that will help pay for this. So I encourage you to take that leap, Madam Chair, and vote this up and do this very good work for our folks in the classrooms. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, Dr. Fritz.
The superintendent recommends the approval of the $500 hybrid teacher stipend for the 2021 school years, quarter 3 and 4.
You've heard the recommendation of the superintendent. Is there a motion for the approval of the $500 hybrid teacher stipend for school year 2021, quarters 3 and 4?
Going in.
I'll make the motion. So moved.
All right. Ms. Burnett made a first motion. All right. You go, girl. All right. Second motion? Second.
I was trying to do it too fast.
Oh, Mr. Carl Chris has seconded. Is there any further board discussion?
Of course.
Yes, sir.
So for clarity, if a teacher taught one day of the new quarter, she would be eligible for this stipend, correct?
It says quarter 3, 4, but I'll get some clarification on that.
In the wee hours of the morning when we hashed this out before, yeah, it had to be that, I'm going back to first quarter, it had to be that they were doing it within the first 3 days and that they taught the bulk of the time in that position. Because we also stated that in the wee hours of the morning that upon us voting on it, they couldn't then now all of a sudden go in and say, hey, I want to opt in to doing it, because we were trying to eliminate it. So I don't know that one day qualifies. I mean, yes, that's my personal
fear. So that we can be clear on the expectation, because, you know, if I am a teacher and I was doing hybrid and brick and mortar jumped up and I was asked to go and, you know, work brick and mortar, arguably I did you a favor and our students a favor. I just want to make sure we are clear so that we don't send out an expectation and then later on someone can say, well, I did 1 week of it and I was asked to do, you know, brick and mortar and I changed my whole life to a different grade for the good of the order and, you know, where's my $500 I really intended to. So I just want to make sure we're clear.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. I'm sorry that we didn't mention this earlier. This is something that we will negotiate and we'll work with the view on an MOU. Since we had the MOU for the first semester, and we'll work on that for the second semester, be very clear on what those parameters are so we can communicate that out effectively to everyone. Okay, thank you. So it's a negotiated item that we will work with the view on.
And that MOU will come before us then?
Yes. Okay. As soon as we get together and we negotiate that, we'll sign that and we'll get that to you for your information.
All right. Thank you very much,
Mr. West.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you for the clarification.
And so the only thing I'll ask is that we keep scenarios like that, because there's a lot of folks that have moved around because we've mm-hmm. asked them to, not because, and they have rocked their world.
Right.
You know, moving from one grade to another grade altogether because that's where we needed them. So just want to make sure as you all have those conversations that we keep those folks in mind, please.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Persis.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and I also want to say that I think it's a wonderful thing that we're doing this, and there aren't mm-hmm. many districts. In fact, Jamie, when you and I first looked at it, there weren't any districts doing what we're doing. In fact, the only one, we found one district that was doing, I think, 250 for
Osceola.
The entire year, right?
Mm-hmm. Osceola it was.
Osceola. So, I mean,
yes, sir.
You know, $2,000 if you had been doing it since the start,
yeah.
mm-hmm. isn't pocket change. So, you know, I'm grateful that we're doing it. I think they deserve it, and I'm just glad we've been able to access the funding for
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Which has all worked out. It's been very
I agree. Yeah. So,
I will say, Mr. Cloney, you do have our commitment that we will do right by our employees on this one.
Thank you.
Okie doke.
Okay,
anything
thank
else?
You. No, thank
oh.
you. Sorry.
Okay, oh, that's fine.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you both very much. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those in opposed, please say nay. The motion has passed unanimously. Congratulations to our live teachers. Board action item 20.06, approval of the district strategic plan. Dr. Fritz.
Board members and public, we did an extensive review today of that plan. Again, I'd like to thank you for your participation, being a part of that. I think there was a sense of feeling today that there was a lot of ownership for this plan. And as I shared with you, we will kick off and make sure that we get this plan out in the community almost immediately. Going to share with the principals next week and go in depth. But I shared with you today that everybody that's a director or higher will go out to community events to make sure that we do this. And again, this plan is built on accountability, and we will be back in front of you very soon sharing details. So it is the superintendent's recommendation that we approve the district strategic plan.
Okay, before we call the motion and vote, I would like to call Ms. Kim Short for 3 minutes of public participation on this item.
Take a chair.
Does it matter? Okay. So I got a chance to listen to everything at home today. I first wanted to start out and just ask the district. I know everybody's always very busy, and that's kind of how it is in the school district, especially during this time. But it would have been a little bit more helpful to have had that information about the strategic plan like a week ahead of time. I think when you're somebody who wants to really know what's going on, it's hard to just have it thrown in there. I would have probably been there today at 1 o'clock had I known. But going through the strategic plan and listening to it, I recently read a book called Engage Every Family, and it's a pretty great book if you're looking for some information about engagement. It's really important to know that engagement and communication are two very different things, and that's kind of where I'm going with this strategic plan. When I learn about things, I like to put them out there for people to find out about so they can give me feedback. I encourage the district to sit back and look at this and find a way to put this in layman's terms for people. Because if you're somebody who's a parent and you're looking at this, and I was on the strategic plan that Ms. Cuthbert was talking about today that was pretty much a disaster and shelved on it. I was on the communications subcommittee, so I agree with you, Ms. Cuthbert. I am excited that we have a new strategic plan. I'm looking at this as a parent, and I want to know what this means. Like, when you say engage all students in high levels of learning every day, and I look at goal number 3 about ensuring all the students have what they're needed, and I look at goal number 4, I'm sorry, I'm going to start to cry, but my kid is in support facilitated classes, and he gets a support facilitator in his core classes 2 days a week. He should have one in there every day. So please do not tell me that I'm not going to get that if this is what we're saying is important. I'm sitting here, and I wasn't even planning on saying anything, and one of my dear friends, who's an amazing teacher, put on Facebook, watching my daughter struggle through her second quarantine and the fact that the district scheduled 2 DIAs in core classes this week has me in tears. Giving my third county assessment to the DIC multiple days to complete since returning in January has me fuming. I learned a new saying today, and it clearly fits what we're doing to our children. We weigh the pig more than we feed it. You know what? I can't say it anymore, guys. I cannot just say it anymore. How many times? You guys know me for a long time. How many times, Mr. Persis, have I come here and said this is the problem? Please, somebody fix this problem because I'm over it.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Short. Thank you. Dr. Fitz.
Superintendent recommends the approval of the strategic plan.
Is there a motion to approve the district strategic plan for the Volusia County? And it will be a 3-year living active document. Is there a motion?
I move approval.
Okay. Mr. Persis has made the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Ruben Colon. Is there any board discussion?
Madam Chair, as much as we've talked about it, and like any plan, it's not etched in stone. It's going to evolve. It's going to change. It's going to change just on the daily things that we hear and see, and the teachers report, and district staff sees and observes. So the strategies, I'm sure, are going to change as we see things out there. I'm sure Superintendent Dr. Balgobin will say, we need to stop doing some of this. We need to continue doing more of that. Particularly when we get into the ESE issues, there's so many different challenges in each of those types of programs that we need to address. So I don't want folks to think that just because it isn't explicitly written in the plan per se right now doesn't mean that it couldn't be added later, or that it could be something that we're if it's a practice that we cannot modify based on what we know. Am I correct, Dr. Fritz? Or
yes, those are the activities. The strategies probably won't change. If you look at this, for example, activities, ELA, math, and science are always going to be important.
Sure.
But the activities and the way we get there and the things that we say are important,
You know, I'll just throw this out there. Say a new acceleration opportunity comes forward for our students. So we haven't thought about it. We haven't heard about it. But if it comes down the pike and we realize there's another opportunity, that'll be a different activity that we engage in. And so those activities will evolve based on those needs. The strategies and goals will probably stay the same for 3 years.
Mrs. Haynes.
So having spent a lot of my life out in the classroom and doing a lot of different, having a lot of different responsibilities, including being a testing chair for 9 years, all right, I listen to teachers every day. I listen to parents. I've sat in, even in this role that I'm in right now, on IEP reviews based on, like, a parent request and things like that. And Mr. Persis, you're right. Like, it has to be a living, breathing document. And this is Jamie Haynes speaking right now. I don't represent, you know, any of my other colleagues' viewpoints or whatever. But at some point, and I'm not saying that the people sitting in this room tonight don't feel this way, all right? We, since last March, we have been living under a pandemic, something that none of us saw coming. There was no guidebook for. We have stretched people to some degree beyond, I think, where they thought they could stretch. And they've risen to the occasion. But at the same time, I'm seeing things that maybe in the past would not have easily upset them. It's upsetting to them now. But this is what I know. You know, I listened again to the ESE teacher that spoke tonight. You know, I just heard what Mrs. Short said. And as I've been out there, I observe this. I'm listening to live teachers share what's happening with live, VOL teachers share what's happening in VOL, our brick and mortar face-to-face, what's happening with them, those that are trying to manage both. I'd like to encourage everybody here tonight, and like I said, you may not see it the way I see it, and that's perfectly okay. We're going to reach a point where we're going to agree to disagree on this topic. But I'd like to encourage everyone, take some time and look back to when you yourself were in school. And remember who was that teacher that made a difference in your life, or that staff person, or that administrator. And what is it that makes you remember them and the difference they made in their lives? And what was school like when you went to school? Now, granted, I'm a little older than some people in this room. I only went to a half-day kindergarten program, okay? I mean, kindergarten wasn't even mandatory back in the day. And we played. We did romper room activities and built with blocks. I remember my kindergarten experience because it was fun. We have so many children nowadays that are living with a label because they have some form of learning issues, physical development issues. We didn't know what autistic kids were when we were in school, and I'm not saying that they maybe didn't exist, but they learn differently. And where I've reached this point in my career is, everybody's not a round peg. And I am concerned that we are allowing a grade and a test score to define who our children are instead of taking them from where they're at and working, even if they take baby steps for a year. And especially since a lot of our kids lost instruction. And they've come back to us, and some of them, they're coming back in. They'll come back in tomorrow. They've had no instruction. So please, go back and look at where you were. Remember what made school wonderful for you or didn't make it wonderful and why. And and I'd say this to the governor even right now, what's more important? That our kids feel safe, happy, and they want to learn. And they'll make progress. Kids will make progress if they want to learn. And it's introduced in a way that reaches them. But it is one of the worst things I ever had to do was administer a test to a second or third grade ESC student that was working at a kindergarten level. And I had to put that third grade test in front of them, knowing they couldn't read it, and just go, that's what you have to do. And you know what? Nobody did that to us. So what we're doing is not working. And I know that we're required, and we have to. But could we think outside the box, and could we go back to where we started? Because guess what? The kids I first taught 30-some years ago, they've gone on and done fabulous things. And we didn't have FSA. We didn't have FCAT. We didn't even have HSCT back then. And we didn't stress them about testing. But we met them where they were, and we took them every year as far as they could go. But we taught them to love learning. And they turned out okay. So I hear and I support the strategic plan. But you know what? Maybe it's time that we step back and say, what's the right thing to do? Instead of just, maybe tomorrow I need to say, thank you, everybody, but I'll go be a grandmother because this is not what I want for my own grandchildren. I don't want my grandchildren to go to school. I want them to do great things and love it, but I don't want them to go to school and be forced to fit into that round peg because every kid's different. But I support the strategic plan. I thank everybody for all the hours of work you've put in on it, but I just think sometimes we've got to get off the train, as Dr. Macklin said, and reevaluate. Because, look, we all turned out okay. And this isn't where we, this wasn't what school
was. Soda. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I learned to read with Dick and Jane, okay? I'm really dating myself. But just, and Dr. Fritz, I don't mean any disrespect.
I don't take it that way. I would like to make some comments at an appropriate time about this, though, to clear some of the air.
Would you mind addressing some of the things we heard tonight?
Sure.
in our weekly meetings with you? I would.
I will, but I think
that
for the public, I have to address a few things tonight.
Okay. Well, I'll make sure you have that.
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
And so I wanted to add, because, you know, the reality is that, and I hear your concern, but until we approve this, and there's a lot more to this, which is the actual strategy, which I think would be helpful, because that's a lot of what I was concerned about. You know, the reality is that the goals are great, and I think that what you just brought up, Jamie, and it really fits into this, only if we, now that it's approved, or when it's approved, this has to come to life. Yeah. And I shared with Dr. Fritz, every member of our team, whether they are the superintendent or the school board member or the custodian, every single member of our team should plug into their purpose in this plan. We all are playing a role into one or more of these sections. And so when we talk about, and I look at these, you know, levels, high levels of learning, I focus more on the increased proficiency and growth. And that's what I heard Jamie say. And it's, you know, and it's basically saying, okay, our kids have been through a lot. This has been, and so let's look at the growth. Now, I realize that the state has not moved the finish line. We are struggling with that. The expectation put on our students, put on our teachers, put on the school districts has not changed. Whether you agree with that or you don't, most of us don't. You know, it's the reality that we have to deal with. But what I'm hearing you say, Jamie, is let's focus on proficiency and growth. And that just may be a different way of looking mm-hmm. at this based on the feedback. And so as we start to connect every employee to this plan, as we connect every student, so every student understands what it is that we're trying to get them to do. And, you know, I always speak about, you know, recently my company rebranded. And there are four things that all of us can pretty much spit out of our mouth. Okay, and it is our service standards. Love me, keep me safe, own it, and make it easy. Those are our service standards. Four, that's it. There's a lot more under vision, all that stuff. Those are the four things, and believe it or not, it becomes a culture where we're like, hey, make it easy. Mm-hmm. Or when you're on the phone and someone's really not giving you what you want, you say, hey, you got to own it, Ben. Mm-hmm. Tag, you're it. And so once we're able to bring this to life, you know, we've got the drawing. Now we have to bring it to life and so that everyone can plug into what their purpose is. Are you a soul soother? Are you a prayer warrior? What is your role? And I say this because I work for a Christian organization. What is your role in this plan? And until every single member of our team understands this and can live it and can almost spit out, keep me safe, love me. I mean, love me covers so much, but it's so simple. It's not just love me. That's it. And so when you find those encounters that go above and beyond, that's called love me. You know, own it. Keep me safe. Everybody wants to be safe. You know, and so I think, you know, the challenge now becomes how does this come to life? And I think that the work, I hate to say this, but the easy part was doing this, because the hard part's going to be carrying it out. And one of the things I've always been critical is the fact that we didn't have a whole lot of key performance indicators that were indicating whether we were making progress or not. And now we're looking at adding those. When we talked about communication, I'm super excited about the work that's going to happen there. And, you know, one of the measurements is the perception of the public and the staff and our internal and external, you know. So when that survey goes out and we get those responses, we're going to have to own them.
Yeah.
And figure out what we have to do. So, I mean, I don't want to use the term rebranding, but we tonight, by approving this, are rebranding. And now it's up to the district to bring this to life. And so that's a challenge for all of us. Thank you.
Yes, Ms. Burnett. Just going through and looking, I'll just say one example because we've all talked a lot about it. But just on the goal 2 under D, strategy, focus providing actionable, meaningful feedback that leads to increase in employee engagement, retention, and performance. I hope that the leadership within the schools and within the districts listen to the end user, the expert user, whether it's the teacher in the classroom or the Schoolway Cafe employee. I hope that we take this and we actually encourage their input, because what I'm hearing and throughout the schools is that's not being heard. Their voice is not being heard. And some of these educators have some fabulous ideas to help move our kids forward, but it's falling on deaf ears. And so I hope that we take this and that we actually put it to good use, for lack of a better word. And I like that you bring up rebranding, because I think that's exactly that. And it's going to take a lot of work, because there's a lot of hurt feelings, so to say, because they're not being heard. And so there's my point. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, it's all about feeling good, being heard, and
respect.
And absolute, the mutual respect. One thing I've noticed, being in Volusia County Schools since 1986, and being at one school, I've always had fabulous support. I've always been able to talk to an administrator. There's always a door open. You know, I've been criticized by parents, but then we've always sat down and worked it through, and then it was, oh, okay, I get it. But as long as we feel, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's a parent, business partner, counselor, bus driver, paraprofessional, and I saw how many paraprofessionals we still need. we all need to feel wanted and appreciated, and that whatever job we're doing is well received. And it's just, you know, that's why I said if we could be proactive, and the schools that are getting their subs and have no problems, we need to celebrate. So, and the celebrations we had tonight lasted an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes. Talk about a wonderful way to have a school board meeting. Forget the business. Sorry. But, I mean, this is what our business is. It's the celebration of our students, and to celebrate our teachers and our volunteers. That's what is so very important, because we need to they need to understand we do appreciate them and recognize them. It's no different. But the one concern I've seen, and it's probably typical in any business, in any entity, is that when you're at a school and you're talking to a parent, or there's a policy out there, and, for example, it's a policy of wearing masks or wearing a uniform, whatever it is, hey, we're not enforcing, it's the district. It's the school board making us do it. You know, we don't want to be blamed. It's somebody else doing it. And we have to feel more like a family. We always talked about the school family, and that's what makes teachers come back and stay. When we hear from Osceola teachers who've been there, who wondered, their parents are there. I mean, that's why your mom stays at Westside, right, Mrs. Short? It's because it's that family feel, and they want to come. And that's why we work at our schools the way we do. That's why the jobs we do. But we also have to feel that way as a family, Volusia County family. And the word team can be overused. It's a four-letter word, just like love. It's overused. But family, to me, has all the connotations of love. Now, are we limited to what we can do? Yes. Finances, legislation, we don't have the same accountability out there for private schools and charter schools that we have, all the hoops that we have to jump through. We have to fight back. A lot of times the legislators are not listening to us. And I spent a lot of time last year before the election is make sure you do your research who you vote for. And the more people you continue to vote for the same people, you're going to get the same results. My daughter was moved out of, and she's been an elementary teacher almost her whole life since 01. And then 3 years ago, she got to be in a non-core class. And she was thrilled, and she felt so good. And I said, why? I thought you loved being in the elementary classroom or teaching ELA. She said, this is the first time in my entire career I have not worked under the pressure of a standardized test. And it made me realize that when she came, that's when Jeb Bush started just fourth grade, eighth grade, and tenth grade standards, standard testing. And all of a sudden it just ballooned because it's an industry that a lot of people are getting paid for. And I remember teaching the HSCT and SAT skills, and that's the only thing being worried about. So you're absolutely right. I had a student, a cheerleader, who's now in the Georgia Supreme Court, the state of Georgia Supreme Court. I have a student who works for NASA in the front room, and she's in Texas. I mean, we have some marvelous, marvelous, very successful, and we continue to celebrate them. But we also have to have all of them. So I would like to know, is it financial or is it personnel? I mean, I heard, who was it? I heard Randy Weingarten speak on a show. And somebody was talking to her about, well, we understand, but you need to hire more teachers. And I'm screaming in my mind going, where are they? Where are our next generation of educators and paraprofessionals? Where are they? We've got a lot of people not going into education these days, or if they are going into education, their parents say, oh, you don't need to go into education. We want you to be a doctor, a lawyer. But see, they don't realize, I think one of the best jobs we can have is being a teacher in a classroom, because we're all born. If we're a parent, we're a teacher. So we're always teaching. It's part of our human nature. It's part of our culture. Let's remember that being a teacher is being part of a family. It's an educational family. And you have educational families. I'm from an educational family. My grandmother, my mother tried. She had to leave school. But she wanted to be a home ec teacher. That's how far back we go. My husband, I mean, my poor grandchildren have educators on both sides of them. So that's, I agree. So I need to stop ranting. I apologize. It is getting late. So let's move, if we need to vote on the strategic plan. So how many would like to say yes to the strategic plan? Please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone oppose? The motion is carried. So it is now a living, breathing document that we can interpret and slice and dice and celebrate, as well as put into action, and we'll see what happens. Okay. 21.01, public participation. We have one card. Miss Elizabeth Albert, come on down.
Good evening again, Madam Chair, members of the board, Dr. Fritz, members of the audience. 2 weeks ago, I spoke to you about district learning walks. Since that time, I've received some feedback, and just last week, the VUE staff and I had a meeting with the assistant superintendents and some other district-level folks, and we talked about learning walks, and what we discussed and what I learned from the assistant supes is a little different than what I'm hearing from the schools. So VUE has created a survey. And we're going to send that out to our folks, and we're going to ask them some very specific questions about learning walks. And I'm going to send the survey to you as well so you can see it, and then, of course, I'll share the data. But what I want to say tonight is that perception is reality. And so when our teachers are feeling a certain way about the learning walks, it really does matter. It matters a whole lot. And the good intentions that are more than likely surrounding the learning walks and what I heard from the assistant supes, sometimes those don't always equal the same outcome, right? So we just want to ensure that the outcome of the learning walk is doing two things. First of all, improving instructional practice, and second of all, increasing student achievement. Because if it's not doing those two things, I think we really need to revisit it. We are more than halfway through the third grading period, and I think at this point it's time to, where appropriate, consider gradual release, differentiating the level of support for the teachers that we're looking at and that we're serving. We do it for students, so why wouldn't we be able to do it for the adults? And tonight you heard from two teachers, and I'm so very glad to hear that their message made it through, because telling their story is the most powerful thing that they can do. And I'm going to continue to encourage them to tell you their stories so you will know firsthand. When I come up and talk to you, I know what you're expecting. I get it. It was the same with Andrew and Susie before her. But when the teachers in the classroom come and speak to you and tell you what they're dealing with every day, I know it makes a difference because I know you care, and it should make a difference. So this is completely in your wheelhouse. This is one of those decisions that we have the ability here in Volusia County to do the right thing about. And I know that as we continue to work on this, we will get there. My hope is that relief will come sooner rather than later, and that we can work together to find a solution that will work for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Albert. 22.01, items from the board. Who would like to go first?
I'll go first.
Mr. Cologne.
I've got nothing. Thank you.
I'll go second.
All right. Let's hear that again from the audience. Not only teasing.
You got applause.
Mr. Cologne,
oh,
that was...
You're not going to get applause.
You set us up really well, so thank you. Mr. Persis.
I would like to double that, so...
Okay. All right. I think you have new friends.
You're getting a lot of pressure over here.
That's right, ladies.
Okay, Ms. Burnett.
Well, I have something. Uh-oh. again, I just want to repeat some of the things I've said this evening, that it's important for us to listen to our community. And I know we have some difficult challenges going on right now, but I hope to hear some positive ideas from our students, parents maybe, school teachers. I know the seniors are a little upset, and rightfully so. So I hope that they come up with some positive ideas to help celebrate and cap off their senior years. And I hope that our administrators are welcoming those ideas and the kids' voice. So yeah. That's basically it. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Haynes.
I just want to piggyback off of what she said. I'm hoping that our seniors out there are thinking outside the box, because I had received a few emails prior to the announcement going out, and I encouraged them to get with their friends and decide, you know, like, well, what activity is the most important to them other than graduation, and what their solutions or suggestions were on how they could do it safely. And I've already had the opportunity to hear what one of the high schools in my area is kind of looking at. And so, you know, I think when you put a lot of student and teacher or administrator minds together on this, and even parents and community, I think we can offer opportunities for our students to still celebrate, because it's important. They've spent a minimum of 13 years to get to this point. And so I too am looking forward to seeing some of what they're coming up with. I've heard some great ideas already, and I hope that what they come up with, we can be supportive of.
Thank you, Mrs. Haynes. Mr. Doran.
Well, I promise to keep my remarks limited to under 15 minutes. now the only thing, I got an email tonight from the city of Daytona Beach, and I'm very excited to have learned that I got appointed to their citizen police review board.
There were just
short of 70 people that applied, and I got selected to be on the board.
Congratulations.
So I'm excited about that.
Congratulations.
That's all I have.
Madam Chair, if I just may, you know what, I do have something, and my wife is listening. Happy birthday to my son, Alex, who turned 16 today. Yeah. So, yay.
Congratulations.
Happy birthday to you tomorrow.
Right? No, it's your birthday tomorrow.
Work that in.
You're the youngster on the board. Own it.
That's right.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
39.
Okay. Thank you. Congratulations on your son. Dr. Fritz.
Yeah, I do want to address the assessment. I got to tell you, when you all hired me on November 12th, you had 7 A schools, 7 out of 70. And I said to you in the interviews, one-on-one in a group, that we are better than that. And nobody disagreed. And so we put some structures in that we really thought would help our schools. And I'm going to share with you the purpose. You've heard me say this, and I've said this to staff 100 times. The purpose of assessment is to drive the instruction. It's to drive the instruction. Now, I'm going to tell you, we've reduced already, and we're going to continue to look at the rest of the assessment. Some will be required. Some will be reduced. But you don't get to get more student performance and get those numbers up without progress monitoring. Our graduation rate, while we made 3 points improvement, we're still behind. So how much do you want me to relax? I'm not going to relax until our students are getting what they should be getting, what their potential is. And so I'm going to share this with you. I think that there's some confusion about what an assessment is. A check for understanding action topics are 5 to 7 questions. Just like when we were reading Dick and Jane, those are comprehension questions that we all did. Now, if we need to clarify some communication, we've never told our teachers to put action topics. Somebody may have to tell them to do it, but we didn't tell them to put those in the school city. It's a check for understanding. It's part of the unit. Our instruction, we will make this, and I'm going to tell you right now, I could have one test, and somebody out there is not going to like it. People do not like to give assessments. But if you don't progress monitor, you don't know where your gaps are, you don't know how to reach out for wraparound programs, you don't know how to move your numbers forward. I want to remind you, 7 out of 70 schools, when you hired me, were A's. That's not real good. And that's a public perception problem. And so I will tell you that we will redefine. I will never be the superintendent that doesn't do assessments to drive instruction. And I will never back off learning walks. We can improve it. Of course, when you walk into a teacher's classroom, if they're not happy or they get feedback,
they're going to say that they're not good. But if we're not out in schools, last year the complaint was from this board, there were a lot of people sitting over here at Brewster that should have been out at schools. Now you walk Brewster and they're not here because they're out at schools. So I say that to you because I felt a little attacked, and I'm going to defend myself and my staff when we need to. If we're going to improve this district, if we're going to take it to the next level where I know the potential is at, yes, we will make mistakes. Yes, we will have to get better. It is a process, but we can't back off. We just can't. And as a superintendent, my kids deserve more than that. I can't back off. And I say that to you with a huge heart and a passion of 30 years in education and a history of improving school districts. This should be an A school district. This should absolutely, when we're done with this strategic plan, be an A school district. But if I stop doing assessments, if I stop doing progress monitoring, if I stop doing learning walks, I can tell you it will not be. It will not be. We will try to improve the craft. We will try to make it better continuously. You have my word. We will do away with any assessment we don't need. We will make sure that people understand that a check for understanding, the quiz that you all took when you were all kids, is not a formalized assessment. I am a superintendent that believes we overtest children with standardized tests. We don't need as many as we do. I hate retention in third grade. I've shared that with you as well. But it's really, really important for us to understand the marching orders. My marching orders have got to be to make this a district that our students are maximizing their full potential. Do you realize if we get our graduation rate to 90% and we get 70% of our students walking across the stage with something more than a high school diploma, an industry certification, an AP course, a dual enrollment course, all of our high schools will be A's and B's, more A's than B's. And this will be an A district just because of the high schools. That doesn't take away the pressure that we have for our DA schools. We have a huge number of DA schools for the size of our district. We can't not progress monitor those kids. We couldn't do it if we wanted to because the state tells us we have to do it. But those are our most fragile kids. And so I just say to you to keep a perspective. I promise as your superintendent to look at anything I can take off the plate. But I also want you to understand if I had one assessment, people would still complain. Because teachers don't like assessments. Not all teachers, but some teachers. And if we're going to move the needle, it's got to be meaningful. It's got to drive the instruction. I will absolutely be committed to doing that. Staff has heard me. How many meetings have we had this week on this? At least four, and it's already only Tuesday. We're going to get better at it, but it will not ever be perfect. I can promise you that now. Assessment is one of those things that we have to revisit it every single year. It's like curriculum maps. You can't take a when there were no assessments, you know what teachers used to do? They would laminate their lesson plans. Year after year, you would get the laminated lesson plan. You can't do that anymore. It doesn't work. Every lesson is based on the data you get now. So I just wanted to say that to you and for you to understand, and I certainly will talk to you one-on-one with this. And staff and I will meet again tomorrow to talk about the reductions because the direction I gave them was this. Go look at every assessment that we have from now to the end of the year. Figure out which ones are really important for driving instruction. And we will clarify what a check for understanding is so that people understand what that is. That's not an assessment. That's a quiz. So thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Certainly. I just have one, that just a proposal, just to think if we could maybe do something in a proactive way. As we look at all of these, let's look at like the graduation and talking to seniors. How long ago has it been, forever, that seniors didn't have an input on how they're going to celebrate graduation or how they're going to celebrate any senior activity? It's always been told to them Now they have a voice. This is a perfect opportunity for our high schools to listen to the seniors to say, what do you want? How do you want to have it? So that we don't create super spreaders. And with the variant going around, you know, I know a couple of kids who've gotten COVID and who, I mean, they're affected for the rest of their lives because of what COVID did to them internally. We have to be careful. Even one person being harmed like that is one too many. But beside that, I would like for us to somehow celebrate being kind. We have, Rose Rowland, don't you wear kind masks? Oh, it's Dr. Clayton, but I've also seen Rose Rowland wear them. But Dr. Clayton does. But also, it's be courteous. If we're kind and if we're courteous, we won't bully. We'll treat each other better, and kids will feel safer in our schools. We tried to address the middle school for a while with an additional administrator. I think with additional a counselor or two, more social-emotional learning and emphasis might help alleviate that. So I know we had a no bullying and a zero tolerance policy, and then we kind of put up our posters and kind of maybe, I mean, I haven't heard a whole lot about it since, but is there a way that we can have a really big campaign, an anti-bullying campaign? And I think that would help, and do it in a positive way, like be kind, be courteous. We did a lot of that after Stoneman Douglas. Let's try to do that again if we possibly can, because if anybody needs to be uplifted in a time period like this, our kids certainly do and our teachers do as well. Let's try to celebrate and look at everything as an opportunity to change, for the change, because as Dr. Balgobin has a sign on her door in her office, if you be the change that you want to see in the world. So let's be the change that we want to see. Let's look, instead of looking at it as a negative, let's look at it as a positive. Somehow, some way, let's be proactive. Let's be comfortable in our own skin and say, you know, we can be better than this. Instead of looking at it as a challenge, look at it as an opportunity to be better. And I think with our strategic plan and with a lot of, we opened up a lot of, we talked a lot today. And we heard a lot of things. And I just had this feeling, maybe this instinct, that this is the beginning of a new birth for Volusia County Schools. So I want to celebrate all of your hard work for the strategic plan. We're going to be negotiating a new contract. We can make changes that way. Coming up this spring, we have opportunities to relook at how we position our personnel, how we use our resources, how we can, I mean, look at what Mr. Griffin has done with the one-to-one technology. This time last year, no way that I ever think we could do this. With our white fleet, we've been able to move with different thinking. I just would like for, as this comes at our level, it needs to filter down to the campus level as well. And I think assessment, as you said, might be misunderstandings at the campus level. It might be the terminology, like Mrs. Short said, terminology that's very comfortable with us. Our public doesn't understand it, or even our teachers who are not, they're just dealing with kids every day and getting their lesson plans in and dealing with live. So they're not part of the latest progress. So we need to educate them as well as what's going on. So I just want to say thank you for all your expertise. We do need to break it down into layman's terms, and if somebody doesn't understand it, well, then let's stick to it, and we'll continue the communication. So thank you, everyone. I'm thrilled about human resources, cutting it down so we can get more applicants in and to get people, the right people in the right places. So thank you very much,
If we started at 3:30, it would only be 7:35.
Just want to let you know.
So it's not really as late as you think it is. Thank you very much. Everyone have a safe trip home. Enjoy your weekend coming up. Thank you so much. See you on March 9th.